morning, everybody. It's 9 a.m. It's October 13th, Thursday, 2023. This is the meeting of the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners. I'm the chairman, Dr. Richard Guarino. And can I get a roll call, please, of board members present?
Dr. Wayne Bennett. Dr. Stephen Knopf.
Present.
Ms. Angela Powell.
Present.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson.
Present.
Dr. Richard Guarino.
Present. Okay, thank you. Board members, make sure your speakers are muted so we don't get any feedback, and or your microphones unless it's your turn to talk. And the same with our Zoom meeting attendees, if you make sure you're muted until your case is up, that will be helpful. I'm going to call out to all of the newly licensed chiropractors in the state. It's your duty to attend one of our meetings in the first year that you're licensed, and if you're here, either virtually or in person, thank you for attending, and I think that you're going to find the meeting very informative for you. Our first agenda item is tab number one. It's a formal interview, and it's the case number 2021-025 in the matter of Dr. Walter Haggard. And if you can please unmute yourself, go ahead and get started. I'm Dr. Richard Guarino. This is the time and place. Formal interview in the matter of Dr. Walter Daryl Haggard, D.C., case number 2021-025. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it by ARS 32-925. Dr. Haggard, can you please introduce yourself into the record? Thank you. You're represented by legal counsel today, I see. Mr. Morrison, can you please introduce yourself for the record as well? Thank you. Dr. Haggard, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this formal interview. Those options include dismissal, issuing a non-disciplinary advisory letter, issuing a disciplinary letter of concern, censure, restitution, placing your license on probation, assessing a civil penalty, or referring this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this formal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. Board members have read the materials. Any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now. During the course of the interview, if it is necessary to refer to a patient, please use initials only to protect their identity. Proceeding is being recorded by our court reporter. As a result, it is important that everyone speaks loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. I'm going to ask board members and staff to introduce themselves for the record, and we'll start to my right.
Angela Powell, public member.
Brian Dominick, investigator.
Alyssa Vanderveen, executive director.
James Monahan, Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General.
Dr. Steve Knopf, professional member.
Mitch Turbinson, public member.
Okay, and I'm Dr. Richard Guarino, chair for the board. I'm going to ask that all witnesses be sworn in by the court reporter at this time, and that includes our complainant, JT. Thank you. We will begin by asking the board's executive director to give a brief summary of the allegations in this case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Ms. Vanderveen, brief summary.
Inadequate history or examination, improper treatment, failure to maintain adequate records.
Thank you. Dr. Haggard, Mr. Morrison, what is your response to the allegations? Thank you. Okay, thank you. So, board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Haggard at this point or counsel?
Yeah, I do, Mr. Chair. has there been a claim filed from the patient, malpractice claim? Okay, thank you. And then my next question is for you, Doc. As part of the files that were submitted, there was some pre- and post-imaging from around the time of care. The patient encounter was sometime end of September 2022. There was additional imaging done in October that following month. An MRI in October was performed. Not by you, but by another group. And that's where they said that there was a worsening of the patient's condition. In your opinion, would your encounter have led to a worsening of the condition pre and post what they saw from the 2019 imaging to the 2020 October imaging? So, in your opinion, what could have led to the worsening of the condition in the patient then? And it would have had nothing to do with your encounter. Okay, that's all the questions I have.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Knauf. Other board members have questions? Ms. Powell?
Yes, just one quick question, Doctor. When you had the patient laying on the roller table, did she have any problem with that? Did you ask her? Was the table moving or was she just laying on it? Okay. She didn't object to being on the table. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Other board members, questions? Okay, well, we've been through this before, but since we're in the formal interview format, I'm just going to summarize some of the things that I've gleaned from previous meetings. So, the patient was someone from your church. She came in at your request to try to help her with a foot problem. We had discussion back and forth in the past about was there a doctor-patient relationship form, and I said there was. You took an x-ray of this patient, even though she didn't fill out intake forms, and decisions were made about how you thought you could help her, which at some point included, you know, her telling you, according to her previous testimony a couple of times, that she does not want any kind of therapy on her neck, manipulation, anything, because she has a condition that Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which has a effect of ligaments of your spine, and she was told in the past that she needed surgery, but she was waiting to get the surgery due to circumstances and complications surrounding the surgery. Her testimony was that you, at some point, had her on the roller table or on a table. You were telling her that you had a technique that helped you, and that was not typical chiropractic manipulation. And it sounds like it was a face-up, lying on her back, supine situation where you were moving the patient's head with some traction. Her testimony was that you tractioned her neck and there was a release. It scared her and she felt worse. Your testimony was that you did not tug on her neck. And so I want clarity around that now that you're under oath, and so explain that part of it to us. So thanks for the clarification on that. And, you know, and this leads back to, you know, in a typical setting, a patient comes in, they fill out the patient intake form. There's a consent to treat form that's filled out. There's a history that's taken. All the right questions are asked. Patient tells you information about their past medical history. You go ahead and ask them more questions and follow up. Orthopedic testing is done. Ranges of motion, compression tests maybe on the neck and other testing that may have revealed at that point already that this is somebody who you're not even going to lay on their back, or maybe something would have happened during the compression test and you would have. There are a whole bunch of things that could have prevented the point where you made a decision about a treatment on a patient that you didn't have all the right information on and didn't review her previous MRI studies, and there were a whole bunch of things that could have happened that didn't happen as a result of all of why we're here today. Mr. Morrison. Okay, and maybe that's part of the problem, you know, because you should have treated her like a complete stranger and did all the proper workup on her to make sure that it was safe to make a decision about what type of treatment was going to be made and then go from there. And then even then, bad things can happen, but at least there's a conversation, hey, I'm about to traction your neck, I think this is going to help you. And that leads to, no, you're not going to work on my neck, or yeah, let's give it a try, and then you go from there. But in any case, if we are here where we are right now, and I want to give the complainant a chance to speak and hear her testimony as well. So one more call out to board members. Do you have any questions to Dr. Haggard before we switch over? Okay. Please. Okay. So, JT, you can come on up, please. Hi, welcome. Thanks for swearing in earlier from the back row, and if you could please introduce your initials just for the record. Okay, thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for JT?
Hi.
JT.
Oh, sorry. JT, since this incident, have you had any ongoing, reoccurring symptoms or issues to date? What would those be, if any?
Okay, so just to clarify, did you have any new or exacerbated symptoms following the incident? And at this point, would you say that you've returned more to a baseline of what you were experiencing for symptoms prior to care? Okay, and then just for the sake of the interview, can you just recount what happened from your point of view during that time in the clinic, please? Just a couple of other questions for you, JT. When you had your arms pulled, you said that you had a subluxation or a dislocation of your collarbone. I imagine that's pretty painful and uncomfortable. Did you mention anything to him right after that had happened? Was there any discussion about that? Are there times where that can happen and it's not painful, that you don't really recognize it in the moment? Okay. I just want to go back to your original complaint for a second here as well, because I think it's easy to lose sight that you did have an initial complaint, being it was your foot that was x-rayed. You said that his claim was that the x-ray was all clear, that there was nothing wrong. Have you found anything wrong with your foot since? Is that better? What's the current condition with that? Okay. Gotcha. That's all the questions I have for now. Thank you.
Okay. So just to get the time frame right, so when he was telling you that he had learned this other technique, that after he had already pulled on your neck, and you was he explaining what had just happened and he learned this technique and it's something that helped him, or was he telling you that beforehand and then he did it? Okay, thank you. Paul.
Yes, just one question. Did you tell the doctor that you had had a mild spinal decompression treatment at some time in the past? Never?
No, I didn't get any information.
You recognize the table in his office? Okay, so spinal decompression never took place. You never have that done, do you? Okay, any traction? Any other kind of... Very specific, in other words. And a physical therapist has done this for you before in the past? So prior to Dr. Haggard doing this form of traction, so to speak, you have had traction. Okay. Thank you. satisfaction. Okay, that felt more like to you an adjustment rather than traction. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so JT, you said earlier that, you know, you wanted to put him on notice. You felt like lines were crossed with the consent, that in the past you were not interested in filing any kind of malpractice suit. Have you filed a malpractice suit? Any other questions? Okay. Thanks. You can go ahead and have a seat again in the back. And Mr. Morrison, you can come on up again. Or you can come on up too. No. No cross-examination and a formal interview. Okay. So before we go into deliberations and decide what we're going to do here, do board members, do you have any other questions for Mr. Morrison or Dr. Haggard? Not. Is there anything you'd like to say before we go into deliberations and we're done talking to you? Thank you. Okay. Let's call board members for questions before we deliberate. Okay. Hearing none, this concludes the portion of the formal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in the matter. So, Ms. Vanderveen, can you summarize what the negotiations were prior to today with Mr. Morrison and his client as to what we were trying to get to resolve this matter and where it landed.
The initial offer was for continuing education and a practice monitor and probation. And Dr. Haggard and Mr. Morrison felt like that was too steep of a penalty. But for staff's feeling was there was concern that he had received multiple indications from the patient that this wasn't something she wanted and had asked him to not, and he proceeded anyway, and that rose above just continuing education, and that having someone in there to deal with what he has stated as a lack in judgment to help mitigate that issue from happening again was my concern. When they came back and said they weren't, that wasn't agreeable to them, I offered the option to retire his license, which would not be a voluntary surrender. We would categorize it as retired with a civil penalty. And that was not agreeable. The next option I provided was affiliated monitors has a clinical competency assessment, and they conduct an assessment of very specific skills or judgment matters, as well as broader competency issues. Just if that was in lieu of having the practice monitor, that at least we would have an assessment to say whether or not there's reoccurring lapses in judgments beyond just a single issue. So that's where we left it in terms of the negotiations.
Okay. Thank you. So I feel like, you know, as a board, you know, we have to decide how do we prevent this from happening again? You know, do we think that this rises to the level of a revocation? Well, I personally don't think so in this case, but we've been taught in our board training that oftentimes when things go wrong, they've happened many times before, and this is the first time that it's coming in front of us. And so we don't know that that's the case or not. We don't know if he's treated other patients the same way, and this has been a practice of pulling people from the church and trying to help them without records. But we do know that we need to keep it from happening again. And so how do we do that? You know, and so a probationary term would satisfy that. With either somebody in the office with him that is going to make sure that this doesn't happen again, where he would have to do a history, the right examination to come up with the right conclusions and the right diagnosis to come up with the right treatment, consent with the patient. So that is one option. If we did the clinical competency assessment, so that would almost have to be like an interim consent agreement that we would have to order that test, get the results from that test, and continue the investigation before we decided to take plenary action or not at that point.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. You could do it that way, or you could do it as final order, as a final consent agreement, if the doctor and Mr. Morrison are willing to sign that and enter into it.
Okay. And then if you were put on a probationary status and required to do the clinical competency assessment and pass it, and then we get the reporting back, and he passes, then it continues on, and if not, then we have to come back before us, and we would have to decide what to do at that point, or it can be written into the agreement.
Yes, you could also put in the agreement that, you know, he'd be required to comply with any recommendations.
Okay, that's true. And so the trouble I see with that is, okay, so you can know right from wrong and still choose wrong, right? Like you can maybe pass that and know that, yeah, I'm supposed to do all these things, but then repeat the same behavior. Those are just my thoughts. And so how do we prevent this from happening again and do our job so that, you know, I feel like it's serious just because in a case where I had a new patient come in to see me and I did not know that they were diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and I did all the right tests and I still consented with the patient and something could still go wrong, well, that would be unfortunate, but that's the way that practice happens sometimes.
But this is a case where he was warned ahead of time and did a procedure anyway that the patient alleges she was injured with. And so to me, that rises to a higher level of what we need to do to keep the public safe. So those are my thoughts, and I'll give any comments or those.
For the clinical monitoring program, was that over the term of the probation? Does that add to the cost, or is that every day? What is the frequency of monitoring provided through that program?
I might be able to help in that department because I'm affiliated with affiliated monitors. And there are, in my opinion, other methods that can be used to test clinical competency that would be far less expensive, for one thing, but that do a really good job. I think it's important we do that, and then maybe issue probation, an order for probation. But as far as affiliated monitors go, there's better choices, and I don't think that he needs to have someone in the practice and watching him. I think we need to find out for some competent practice, right? And then move forward with probation. We'll be both in the same agreement.
Okay. So I get the general sense of what direction this might be headed, and if that's the case, then I need a motion to adopt findings of fact, conclusions of law for the allegations that are in front of us. And rage down what we think we need to do about it.
This is Dr. Steve Knopf. I'll make a motion. Is a fact. Fact number one, inadequate history or examination. There wasn't any done with the patient. Fact number two, improper treatment. This is really by way of not having any history or examination done. You wouldn't be able to determine what proper treatment would be. And so I believe finding fact number two, improper treatment, stays. And then fact number three, failure to maintain adequate records. Again, there were no records kept with this patient encounter.
Okay, so we have a motion to adopt all three findings of fact. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Second by Ms. Paul, first by Dr. Knopf. I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? So four ayes and one absent. Okay, so now the three conclusions of laws as listed, or you can...
Yes, I would make the motion to adopt the violations of law as listed.
In the investigation report?
Yes, sir.
Okay. For a second?
Second.
First by Ms. Powell, or first by Dr. Knopf, second by Ms. Powell. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? So four ayes adopt the conclusions of law. Okay. So now on to deliberation for what to do.
And I guess, Angela, this is more comments for you, but I'm share the same mindset as Dr. Guarino. I think there's tests that you can pass just for the sake of passing a test, but it really doesn't help in the moment with what is the practice in the day-to-day. So my concerns are similar to yours in that you can know right and wrong, but you can still practice differently outside of that. So with that being said, I don't know with your experience what the options are.
I guess my concern, too, was the particular company. We have options, right, that we can use. That would be my recommendation. I can agree with you. Okay, that's definitely plausible. I just couldn't see using this particular company's approach because I've seen them before, and that's not going to solve the problem either. And because the woman who's complaining, I'm sorry, JT, thank you. Her goal is to make sure that this competent practice, that this doesn't happen again. So it was a gross judgment, an error in judgment, the biggest problem here. Not necessarily that she was hurt, but she was. on saying this competency, the decision making, that's the real issue. Sometimes that happens with fasting or.
So I guess are there recommendations that you'd make?
And whether you put this in an order or a consent agreement, it may change the way you craft it, the way you do it. With the consent agreement, you know, you can be more broad in your language, and then you can work with them to effectuate that. And, you know, if not within, say, not signed within, say, 30 days or 60 days, then move to formal hearing, and we'll be on that track. It still allows us time to settle if we need to move on to. But with an order, you're going to want to specifically, if you're doing it as an order, you're going to, if you're going to issue an order, you want to do, you want to specifically lay out what you want them to do.
Got it.
What do you think?
I think, having served on this board for 10 years, it's best done in a consent agreement. The language will be nice and tight. It'll give Mr. Morrison and his client a chance to agree to that language or not. And then if we come back in a formal hearing, can still do whatever we feel like we need to do at that point. So you're going to make a motion to offer a consent agreement, have signed within however many days, go to formal hearing, by terms of kind of have to take some type of competency exam by our board. And I've been going to the Federation of Chiropractic Licensing Board meetings for 10 years as well now, and I just want to say, to counterpoint Ms. Powell, we've been using affiliated monitors, you know, for a long time, and all of the other boards that I speak with use them as well. I mean, almost all of them. So I don't know where good, better, and best lies, and I'm sure you have personal experience to back up what you said, but I just wanted to throw that out there, too.
For sure, we have options.
Yes. Well, I'll make the motion to offer a consent agreement with the terms of 1 year probation and to have some clinical monitoring in place.
A monitor or a clinical competency exam?
I'm more along on, excuse me, the monitor side, okay, rather than a competency exam. So it'd be a clinical monitor, and that's to be signed within 60 days, and if not, it would move to a formal hearing.
I'll second the motion.
Did you just want the practice monitor, or did you want any continuing education to be part of the consent agreement? Keeping?
Continuing education.
Yeah, I think 6 hours of continuing ed for record keeping. Then that's in addition to what's required for your annual renewal. Yes, sir.
Okay, is that friendly to the second?
Second.
Okay. Not at the moment. Sorry. All right. So any further discussion, board members?
One thing, I'm not sure we have much. I understand the concern about, you know, it's really easy to pass an exam, but it's also easy to, you know, be on your best behavior when you have a monitor around. So I'm not sure if there's much difference between the exam and the monitor, and I know that's kind of the problem we have. And I just don't know that we have any evidence of, and I know we don't know what we don't know, but we don't have evidence that this, you know, was anything more than just a one-time severe, as it was, but, misjudgment on the doctor's part. And so I'd be more willing to go with the exam approach just because I don't see a difference between someone who knows right from wrong and just does wrong once. And so I personally would rather go with the exam just because I think it just makes more sense. But.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jurgensen. Any other discussion?
Yeah, it's a fair point. We don't know if it's been an issue in the past. I know typically it is when you dig into some things, but we can't say for sure. So I would be open to the exam conversation too if we want to go that route.
Any further discussion?
Can I mention one thing just so you all know? Since we're at the disciplinary phase, he does have a previous consent agreement and a letter of concern and probation from 2006, and it was a similar instance of he provided digital x-ray without providing establishing medical necessity for the procedure, and it was 2 years of probation, 24 hours of CEs, and 3 record-keeping audits per year, and he had to take in passengers for his exam. So I just thought maybe you should be aware of
you've
had previous.
Or Weston, medical necessity for taking x-rays?
They were digital motion x-rays.
Yes. For 3 patients without establishing medical necessity, the digital motion x-rays on each patient had not been sufficiently supported as medically necessary with an appropriate examination, assessment, reviewer records, or consultation. The investigation also disclosed that the respondents failed to create and maintain adequate patient records that included documentation of a history, assessment, examination, or an accurate, substantive radioactive report for each patient.
So, I think we have a motion in a second.
Yep.
Still discussing and discussion. Okay. Well, I'm going to call for the question. So the motion is for a consent agreement to be offered with 1 year of probation with an in-person clinical monitor, hours of continuing education with record keeping, completed within 1 year. So those in favor of that signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Are there any opposed? Okay. There are none opposed, so the ayes have it. Okay. So you've heard what we've decided to do. If you would like to, you'll be contacted by board staff. If you'd like to appeal, you can. In the event that you don't like our decision today, the time to appeal does not begin to run until the documents are mailed to you. And if you have any questions, contact the board on another day. Thank you. Okay, the time is 9:55. Does anybody need a break? Tab 7. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back, and we'll go out of order. Okay, the time is 10:06. We're back in open meeting after a quick recess. Number 7, matter of Dr. Jeffrey Wolfson. Whether to open tab. So if you can please introduce yourselves for the record. Dr. Wolfson, your mic is muted.
And Dr. Jeff Wolfson.
Thank you. Andrew Bean.
Dr. Wolfson contacted the board's office regarding his licensure status back on February 2nd. His license was put into admin suspension for failure to renew. Board staff notified him via email. He did respond that day. We notified him that he had paid the fee, but we never received the application. And then we never received the actual renewal application until March 24th, and then it was processed and returned to him on March 25th. He contacted the board's office and requested that first he talk to licensing coordinator, Connie Gillum. And he wanted his renewal backdated from March 25th to the admin suspension date of possibly January 1st. It wasn't clear how far we were, I guess, backdated to January 1st. And our staff told him we couldn't backdate or change documents because those are official board records. So he requested to speak before you, but he made pretty specific demands about that he felt we should correct that because he had issues with the board's website. But I provided communications to show you that we were communicating with him in real time regarding trying to assist him with that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Morrison, what would you like to say on behalf of your client?
Well, first of all, I'd like to point out, we brought this to you. It wasn't that, some kind of violation or some improper behavior going on. Brought it to your attention because we heard with apparently various turnover with staff. Switch. What happened is Dr. finally filed his application, both for himself and for his wife, and her application went through, her payment went through, everything went through fine. He filled out an application, submitted it, and it was approved. And he went through for January 1st. So when she was surprised by that because by saying at the right time. Once he did get that actual notice, though he was frustrated with the system, as in time for filing late, submitted another application when he felt everything was a bullet point here under number 5 under the memorandum that said that practicing and had a conversation said he had a malpractice claim. That's not quite accurate. What happened is one of the attorneys contacted him, the company refusing to pay his bill, he suspended. Your license is not correct. And this was his second surprise. Okay, he has done everything absolutely correctly. And so when he found out for the second time, he had our request to the board at website, his application did take his money. And so for him to have the understandable belief properly registered, we'd like to correct the voice and license. He's in good standing right now, but to first, so that there are no gaps and problems. Again, because apparently he did everything correct, it went through, and like I said, it went through in his life, it for some reason didn't take his. Our request is that first,
all right, thank you. So, if he was able to get his wife done and understood the process, I don't know why it took so long. Why did it take all the way to March? I mean, if he was having trouble with the website, he could have printed a paper application. He could have came to the board and got it handled within a week or two. I don't think that we even have the authority to backdate or do anything. It sounds like a fraud issue for us if we were to go ahead and do that. And so is there something else happening? Are there malpractice cases or anything laying out there?
No, it's Dr. Wolfson required to have the records reflect.
He was because his renewal didn't happen until March, and if you're after January 1st, you're automatically on administrative suspension, and that's the status of your license.
Understood, but it's also understandable that he did his application in December payment was taken, price application was taken, that wasn't aware in getting paid. So informed of that, obviously upset because he did it in a timely manner. Wasn't like he was late or somehow afraid feeding to the patient. It's our position that the system somehow failed the application process. He was informed the second time, exact same thing. Fine. Application. And it was rejected, but he wasn't aware of that until later when he was told the company looked at him and said, we're not paying this bill. So again, my feeling is, I'm not sure what authority you have, but I certainly think the fact that now the record reflects that the license has been administrated and suspended, accurate that that happened, but it shouldn't happen. It's something that the board should have the power to correct.
Can I offer a point of clarification? Because the statute says that it has to be the payment and the application have to be received before January 1st. And Connie, if you'll scroll up on the website, so the payment and the Adobe sign for the application are two separate processes. The website on the renewal page, Connie, keep going all the way. Oh, go to the renewal section. On the website says, if you do not see this page that you have successfully submitted the application, you need to go back and do it again. Because it is a dual process. So just to say that your payment has been received, you have to go into the board's payment portal to submit the payment and sign the renewal document to submit the document. Keep scrolling, honey. So right here, it says, thank you for signing the renewal application. You get a copy of your renewal as a placeholder while the board is processing it to demonstrate that you successfully completed your application and we've received both your payment and the renewal.
Okay, and you're like muted. So you've had conversations about this in the past, and you have had multiple conversations with Dr. Wolfson
mm-hmm.
about this over the course of several months.
Correct? Yes.
Okay. So, board members, this is a letter to open case. So were you treating patients on a suspended license, on an administrative suspension during that time?
Unknowingly, yes.
Well, why do you say unknowingly? You had multiple conversations with the board knowing that your license was not renewed yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, why would I pay being a doctor, you had to attest, and then it asked your bank information, you pay. I did that at least three times. But every time it just would not print out my certification.
Right.
So you
paid the fee, and then you have to...
But I don't know I paid it until it goes to my bank statement, right?
It's a two-part process. You pay the fee, you didn't renew when you paid the fee. Then there's a renewal application that has to be submitted successfully. That gets to the board. The board has to approve that over the course of a couple of weeks, and then you get a certificate after that. And you knew the process because you did it for your wife.
I helped her with it, but it would give you an email that it was confirmed. I don't look at my wife's emails. You know, I just assumed, and once I saw it hit their bank statement, so I'm like, okay, we're fine. And to be honest, my wife had an issue a year or two ago with this, and it was handled. And so that's where I was like, oh, go get back to me or something if something's not right. You did in February, so immediately I paid the amount, and it doesn't work again for me. I'm thinking it went through again, but I can't print the diploma or the certificate. And then I get contacted again in March, and I'm like, well, I paid the penalty, which I thought would backdate it. What else would there be a penalty for? And then I discover in March it finally goes through, because I didn't have to go through the bank process. I don't know if that was the glitch in my computer. I have no idea. There's no ill intent on my side. You know, I've been doing this for 23 years. I want to do the right thing. And so, you know, it wasn't until it came to my attention was from an attorney that I'm like, oh, holy crap, I can't believe that, you know, this is a thing. So that's, you know, again, I have experience with a previous board member that was able to handle that. And I'm like, I thought that was just, you know, standard procedure. And so I was waiting for that to be handled, yet I had to wait over a month before somebody from the board to let me know I was suspended or that I did not go through. And so, you know, when I'm contacting, again, even in February, I thought it went through.
Can I make a couple? So on February 3rd, he was emailing with board staff, and the email address he's using is the same email address that he used for his wife's application, because it's for Jeff and Larissa Wolfson. So it's for both of them. And board staff said, I apologize that you've been having challenges with the renewal application, but if you complete the renewal application it was received by staff, you would have received a completed copy of the renewal application from EchoSign at EchoSign. So we were telling him how to confirm that we had received that application.
When was that email?
That was on February 3rd.
Okay.
At which time you filled out another application. It's fine. And assumed everything and didn't.
Right, and board staff said, told him how to pay the late fee, and that if he ended up paying the renewal fee again and the late fee, that board staff would renew the fee, would refund the fee, and then no more communication until Thursday, March 24th, and he says, I'm inquiring about the status of my license, and I paid again on February 2nd, I filled out all the forms but never received the email confirmation. Well, I don't control the email confirmation. The email confirmation comes from Adobe Sign. All of us have used Adobe Sign to purchase large pieces of property in the last probably 10 years, right? You get the confirmation. We told him how to get the confirmation. His wife got the confirmation. So to say that we're just going to fix it, I have serious concerns about the situation we put the board in. Because we've had other people before us that have had the same situation that we've left on admin suspension.
Okay. Other board members?
How do you get the confirmation?
It emails you a copy of the completed renewal application.
And then you do what?
As soon as you hit the click to sign button. So once all the fields are filled out and it's to zero for the required fields, there's a button that pops up at the bottom that says click to sign. And you push that button, and it automatically sends it to board staff. You don't have to download it. You don't have to attach it to the email and send it. It automatically goes into the board staff Adobe Sign account. And then when we process them, we review them. It automatically date stamps it with the date we process it. And then the completed application with the completed signed renewal certificate is sent back to the doctor as confirmation that we processed it. But they get a copy of the initial application before board staff adds the signature.
And that happens after they pay, right? So fill out the application, then go to the next step.
Yep.
And then come back.
Correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Robinson?
Sonny, even understanding, even if it was an innocent mistake, I just don't, you know, you have to kind of help us out how we're able to statutorily backdate something, because, you know, ARS 32.923 says the board shall administratively suspend a license automatically when this happens, when the application is not received. And so it's undisputed, obviously, the application wasn't received, and so I'm just not getting to what allows us to then backdate something.
Yes, on February 3rd, when you pay the fine and use the application again, for nothing until March, which is when the attorney contacted. It wasn't the board that said you're still administratively suspended, but the attorney saying, you've got a problem. Otherwise, he would have never known. And again, he did. The reason we're asking the board to fix it is everything he was supposed to do, not user error. And if the machine makes a mistake or somehow doesn't do what it's supposed to do, why does that fall on him as far as his burden and what he was supposed to do?
Well, the two points on that. First is, the doctor's July 18th email, he says the website kicked me off instead of allowing me to print the license. So he knew something went awry. And if you have that feeling, call the board. I mean,
but short-staffed, right? You can't get a person. I did this on Christmas, right? And so I'm thinking no one's going to be around anyways. So I was waiting for a timely response if that was necessary. I'm looking at this going, every time I have good intent here, I'm not trying to not do it. Every time I filled it out, it was fine until I went to print the certificate, and then it wouldn't print. And I'm like, did all that data get entered then or not? It happened over and over again, and I'm like,
double-checking the bank statement.
But as we've seen, that's two separate processes. But beyond that, the question is the legal question of what gives us the authority to do something that's contrary to the statute that says we have to automatically suspend. We can't unsuspend and backdate something just because we feel like it. But that's not backdating.
But you can indicate that it was inadvertent.
But it wasn't inadvertent. It has to be automatic. And so it's
a website issue. Was inadvertent because it shouldn't have been.
Well, I don't know that we can say that it was a website issue because we weren't sitting next to him when he was trying to complete it. We can't say that it was a technology error as much as we can just say, yeah, he definitely did it right. There's no validation that we can sit here and say, yeah, he for sure got through the process doing all the right steps because we weren't present when he did it. And so we have to take that on his word that he completed the actions correctly.
But, and I think a good question for staff, though, would be, during that renewal cycle, did you have a significant number of issues with other people who renewed as far as the website not allowing you?
We had a few, which I think is typical with any sort of technology, but again, 2,400 people were able to renew last year.
I've done it for 23 years. I mean, this is not. My wife's got a different email. If you can show that went to my email, I'd be happy to eat my words, but she has a different email. Shared an email 20 years ago, and I just kept it. So,
okay, so board members, we're on a weather health and test. Are we going to open up a complaint regarding practicing on a suspended license during that period? We obviously know that they want us to backdate it. I don't think that we can do that. How do we move forward from here?
I don't see a reason for us to move forward as far as in regards to trying to backdate this license. I just don't think there's anything there.
I would agree that we shouldn't open a case.
Okay, so we can, there is no case open yet. So we motion to take no action.
I'll make a motion to take no action.
Hold a second.
Second by Dr. Knopf, first by Ms. Powell. Any further discussion, board members? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go back to number two. On our consent agenda to dismiss. Case number 2021-033, Dr. Lori Doty. I believe she's present. Ms. Vanderveen?
So this matter's on the consent calendar, so if you all agree with the board staff's recommendation to dismiss, you can just vote to adopt consent calendar, and we can move on to the next step.
I would make that motion.
Okay. We have first to adopt the consent agenda, and second to do with that. Ms. Holly, your mic is off there.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay. On to tab number 3, which is Dr. Gregory Bidlack. And for any recusals?
Dr. Green, I'll be recused.
Okay.
And the allegations are danger to the health, safety, and welfare, inappropriate physical contact, sexual improprieties, noncompliance with the board subpoena, failure to complete continuing education, violation of a board order, and failure to maintain adequate records.
Thank you. Call out to Dr. Bidlack. Are you present?
Can you hear me? I am Dr. Greg Bidlack. I'm present by phone because I couldn't hook up with you, and I just got out of rehab, so I really have trouble walking, and I have to go to the bathroom a lot because of the medicines I was taking.
Too much information, Dr. Bidlack.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. And what about your counsel? Are you represented today?
Hey, good morning. This is Jeff Hunter here on behalf of Dr. Goodlock.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. And then do we have the complainant with the initials D as in David, J as in James?
Yes.
DJ, are you present as well?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Welcome.
Also, okay. I have a witness with me.
Okay. Does she have initials?
JC.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Hunter, is there anything you'd like to say on behalf of your client at this point?
This thing's been pending for a couple of years now, and Dr. Bidlack remains in his initial position here of denying the claim. Made in reference to the prior order and getting, which required him to undergo the EDAF examination. I understand there are some issues with that, but that got straightened out, and he did complete that examination. So other than that, the board has specific questions. We're here to answer those questions.
Okay. Board members, any questions at this point?
Before you ask questions, I just want to bring to your attention that Dr. Bidlack did comply with the interim order to take the EVAF. However, when we received the scores, Dr. Bidlack did not pass any of the required sections for the EVAF.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Bidlack at this point? Okay. Go ahead and unmute Ms. Powell.
Dr. Bidlack, your patient complained for years of constant dull, sharp pain, intermittent low back pain with radiation in his lateral left hip. Is that correct?
I don't have any notes in front of me.
Okay.
I will accept that's perhaps her complaint. Okay.
Okay, so the record states that during the exam you did no orthopedic or neurological tests. Is that correct?
I do not do orthopedic or neurological checks. I do amazing chiropractic assessments.
Okay. So the exam consisted only of palpating. Is that correct?
palpating osseous.
That's fine.
And muscles.
Okay.
And looking for imbalances. Yes.
Okay. And there were no vital signs taken.
No, ma'am.
In your opinion, then, would you consider this an adequate examination for a patient with a long history of chronic pain and radiating pain?
Absolutely.
Okay. Your diagnosis for the patient were all subluxation codes. Why didn't you address the radiating pain?
I always address the cause of symptoms, believe it or not, related to and I'm very successful at it.
Okay. So you're suggesting that the subluxation code points to the radiation, the condition of radiating pain? What about the chronicity of the problem?
Number one, I have not seen this person for years. She had a history to express to the joint. But as she addresses herself and comes to me, I always ask what symptoms they have, get on my table, and I search for subluxations related to the symptoms, along with I also assess subluxations perhaps not related to the symptoms. But I try to correct all misalignments or subluxations as best I can on every visit.
Okay. Did you review any imaging studies or past records on this patient?
If there were past records available, they would have been presented to me. There were, I don't recall seeing any x-rays on this person.
So you had no records to review, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying I don't recall whether there was any radiological x-rays in the history in our available systems.
Then would you say, were you thinking it wasn't medically necessary to have imaging studies on this patient, so you didn't order any?
No, I didn't say that, and I didn't order any. I may suggest other assessments. If someone is not getting well in a short amount of time, in a reasonable amount of time.
Okay. 4 days after having seen the patient, adjusted the patient for 4 days, the patient's pain levels were doubled to the original levels. Did you notice?
Excuse me?
Excuse me? 4 days after having adjusted the patient every day, the patient levels, pain levels, doubled from the original baseline?
I do not believe that.
You don't believe that? The
I don't believe it. I didn't record that. I don't recall of that, but if somebody got worse, it's very seldom anybody gets worse under my care. Ever.
Okay. Did you note any pain levels on those 4 days?
We placed pain levels on notes most of the time.
On your notes, it says, your assessment says for treatment, the patient is responding to care and is worse. How is that possible?
I don't know. But if I wrote
documented.
It. Okay, if I wrote it, then that's true at that point. I wrote it.
Okay. What ensues after that is a total of 40 treatments, of which you provided 7. The rest came from other joint providers. All of these treatment records were about half a page in length and nearly identical in language and treatment. Did you just clone the records from appointment to appointment?
Never. Never do I clone records, ever.
Okay.
I write down what I have heard from the patient, what I find, and I put down that whatever I find, by the way, I also correct. I don't wait. I always correct. In fact, I more than
to send a force, I post-check every adjustment I ever do to see if I got it. If I didn't, I adjust it again, or again, or even again. And I post-check every time. I'm the only one I know that does that.
Well, the plan of care was two or three times a week for the next 2 weeks. And the pain levels remain pretty much the same over this four-month period. There's no evaluation performed, or there's none documented anyway. Do you feel that this level of documentation meets the standard of care? Or should I say lack of documentation?
Ma'am, if there is a record that shows that the symptomatics are the same, perhaps they're not the records that I myself put in day to day. Maybe they're just in the record somewhere, and I have nothing to do with changing those records. That's possible.
Okay. Just a couple more questions for you, Doctor. On the 29th, the patient alleges that you ran your fingers down her lower back and between her buttocks. Did you do this?
Ma'am, I'm going to tell you what I do almost on anybody face down who has any kind of complaints. I will always use my two thumbs on the initial tuberosities looking for inferior or superior discrepancy or misalignment or imbalances. And then on top of the initial tuberosities, I'm going to be looking for A to P misalignments or discrepancies. And if I find it, I will correct it. Then I go to, most of the times I go to the coccyx S4, and see if there's any rotation in the coccyx. If not, I'll go to S4, S3, S2, S1, always using my thumb. And if I see that any rotation of those so-called fused bones, I find that they each can rotate, and that I will correct it. Then I move up to the lumbar spine and the rest of the spine.
So is the answer to my question a yes?
What's your question again? I never, ever in my life inappropriately put my my hands, fingers, anything inappropriately in between that area,
well,
except to the chiropractic diseases.
You may not think it's inappropriate, but my question is still the same thing. Did you put your fingers between her buttocks? Whichever fingers.
If assessing a coccyx and the S1, S2, S3, S4, well, the other way around is 4, 3, 2, 1, if that could be considered inappropriate by somebody, more or less, more.
Okay.
Professional.
She alleges on the 31st you read your erection on both her arms. Did you do that?
No, ma'am. I couldn't even get an erection.
Okay. She walked out on the treatment before you finished. She got up from the table and left. Is that your recollection?
Nobody has ever walked out on me, disgruntled, ever in 42 years.
Okay.
And
that is my question.
She never walked out on me, never.
Thank you.
Okay, and to our public member, I just want to let you know, so that the sacrum is the lower part of your low back below your belt, and it has segments that drop down below that between left and right butt cheeks, or the way you turn and hold, or the so in that area, he's acknowledging that he's palpated and touched those areas to evaluate patient's health is inappropriate. Okay, so, Dr. Bidlak, along the lines of your record keeping, this is Dr. Guarino. I know you have testified today that you don't have the records in front of you, but I found a lot of problems with your record keeping.
Dr. Graham, just a point of clarification. Dr. Bidlak and his attorney both received the exhibits and the patient files. Just for clarification, he does have them.
Oh, I understand that he has them, but he's saying that he doesn't have them in front of him right now, and so I'm going to tell him what I have seen looking at these records. as Ms. Powell stated, you got a patient who claims that she had left hip pain for a long time.
Yeah.
Radiating pain into the left thigh. At some point, there was right knee pain. There was left and right rib complaints throughout your course of treatment. Left knee pain. There was an adjustment to the left knee. And in almost all of these cases, there was no orthopedic or neurological evaluation that was done. Rather, subluxation listings and then treatments, you know, that were done on some of these areas. And at some point, left and right ankle pain, and then right shoulder pain. So, you know, these are definitely below standard. You know, the diagnostic codes that you included for the M99.01 codes, M99.02, M99.03, 04, and 05, which are spinal, cervical, thoracic, lumbar, sacral, and pelvic diagnostic codes for somatic dysfunction, but never a determination made for knee problems, hip problems, rib problems, ankle problems. Not only was the testing not done, not only was the history not taken adequately, but there was no diagnosis rendered, and then there was a treatment rendered, so there's a lot of problems with all of that. Now, back to, and that was the
other one. May I interrupt you, sir?
Go ahead, Dr. Goodluck.
What you did was you just spoke your viewpoints, which I appreciate and I respect, but you gave me no opportunity to respond to any of the large paragraph you just spoke.
Okay, well, please be concise and give me a 2-minute summary of your response to what I just told you.
If I ever adjusted the knee, the first thing I'm going to look at is a tibia that is turned out that's not matching the femur, and I would actually turn the femur back to center so that that would reduce the stretches in the knee. That's the first thing I would do on anybody complaining of a knee if they had that tibia turned. There are several other things, like a tibial head is oftentimes posterior. There could be a patella problem, and I would check one thing after the other until I find what needs to be corrected. I don't need neurological orthopedic checks. Chiropractic is great by itself if you use all the chiropractic assessment tools of assessing bone, assessing muscles, trying to correct something. When you do this, it is enough to accomplish it. If it doesn't accomplish something, I'll tell the patient you need to go to an orthopedic doctor or neurologist sometimes. When someone's not getting well, that's what I would do.
Okay, well, did you refer this patient out to anybody else?
No, I didn't sense there was any need to yet.
If the patient has neurological complaints of numbness or tingling or burning pain, you don't need to do an evaluation, you're saying, and you don't need to refer that patient out either?
So let me tell you something. If somebody has tingling in half their body, I know exactly where it's coming from. It's a skull not sitting on the neck right. I correct the skull, and the tingling and numbness goes away. Now, chiropractors may not know how to fix that, but I do, and I fix so many things. And I do it over and over again. I'm the happiest chiropractor alive when I was practicing for the joints, because I had happy patients telling me how good they feel every day, all day long, and all the chiropractors were amazed at that, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you answer a question for me? In reviewing the notes on this patient, you made a recommendation, treat this patient 3 times per week for 2 weeks on January 20th, and then do a reevaluation and the care plan on February 20th. This patient treated all the way through the end of May 26th, and that never changed. And I'm wondering, how is that possible with the record-keeping system?
Okay,
why would this patient treat for 39 to 40 visits and have your recommendation stamped on it through the months of March, April, and May? How does that happen if the records are not somehow cloned and repeated and that kind of thing?
Well, my area of notes is never cloned. Now, if there's something hidden in the computers of the joint, I have no knowledge about that. I never would never was given knowledge about that. I simply go day to day. I keep my records as my records. Whatever I find or I first of all, I never recommend. I have never written. You never find my notes that say reevaluation at such and such a date. No, I don't do that. Not there. This is a wellness clinic primarily, but nonetheless, if there is information going into that computer that I'm not aware of, that's not my business almost. It's not almost not my business, I suppose, but it's not my business. I only do what I do. I change what I change. If something is the same, I'll put it the same. But I have, whatever you just said is not really something that I know about.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any other questions for him before we move to the complainant? My final question is just regarding your hip surgery that you recently had. Are you in shape to work on patients at this point? Are you looking to get back into practice anytime soon?
Well, yes, but you know, the surgeon told me I'd be walking the day of the surgery. I can hardly walk still because I think he did something wrong in the surgery. I'm not sure about it, but I have my left thigh is longer by 2 inches. When you sit all the way back in a chair and you measure, or when you bend your knees when you face up, and you can see that knee is like 2 inches different. I don't know whether that's something I just will go away or not, but I'm still suffering. So there's not, I need to get back to work because I'm out of money, but I'm limited still. My back hurts me more than my left hip, by the way, right now.
Justice, call karma.
Sorry for all that.
I couldn't hear you, sir.
Which our attention.
Doctor, that was a statement made by one of the witnesses. And I'll call for it. So don't worry about it.
Okay. So to the complainant with the initials DJ, what are the initials?
Yes. What are the initials, Dana Johnston? Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Now, you have brought somebody with you today. What are initials?
JC.
JC?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, in any testimonies that we get from JC today, we want it to relate to your complaints. We don't want to hear a separate story about what she went through. We want to hear how it is with you, and go ahead and tell us if there's anything that you would like to say at this point.
Yes. I have the same complaint that the other lady had about Dr. Bidlack running his fingers between my butt. Not only once, but 2 times. The first time I
Okay, hold on. Is this JC?
No, this is DJ.
DJ, okay, continue.
I thought, is this real? It can't be happening. And then he walked up to my left side, ran his erection up my left hand, bent over me and said, "Are you with me in this?" And I thought, "What are you talking about?" And then I thought, he does it so subtly that I thought, well, I'm this can't be real. So I left, came back again for another appointment. He did it again. At that point, I went and I went to another joint, and he was in there. And I left the other joint and canceled my membership at that time because he was still there. I then called Dr. Smith at the joint, made a complaint, and have not been back since. Since on 5/29, I did a police report with the City of Surprise, and turned it into you and my complaint. And that's my story. And so if you want to talk to JC, she's sitting right here.
Okay, well, if she has something relevant to discuss relating to your case, that's fine, but I don't want to hear about it, any of her separate issues with Dr. Bidlack.
Well,
so this is your chance, JC, if you would like to say anything as it relates to...
Well, I have recommended Dr. Bidlack to DJ here, and I'll just tell you, I don't know. I tried to file a complaint, but because COVID was out, I had a really hard time. I could not go to the police station, and they never did make it to my house. All I'm going to say is same issue. And I did call Dr. David Smith, too, and I complained. And I'm really appalled at the joint that they allowed him to keep working, and that this has taken 2 years. And it wasn't until I verbally, I said, hey, we hadn't gotten back to the joint. I said, did it happen to you? She said, yeah, same thing. They're almost identical, except that kept working on my wrist. And at that time, he had a big erection for me. And like I said, I did call, and like I said, the only reason I didn't get a complaint is because of COVID. So... yeah, we can
hear
notes, and it sounds like
everything's
identical. And as long as he can't practice, that would be great. And I am no
longer with the board meeting. All right, thank you. Board members, do you have any specific questions to complain? Okay. I think we need to go into executive session to get legal. Yeah.
Make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
All right, I'm saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, there are none. So we got a first by Ms. Paul, a second by Mr. Turbin. Our board is going to go into executive session. We will be back in a few minutes to continue this meeting, okay? Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, this is Dr. Zarino. It's 11:02. We're back in open session. Board members, any further questions for either the complainant or Dr. Bidlack before we go to do?
I don't think so. Make a motion to move to formal interview.
Okay.
I'll second. And is that based on the potential violations and allegations that are found in the board's investigatory report?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? Call for the question. Those in favor of moving this to review, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, we have three ayes. Okay, thank you, Dr. Bidlack. So we're going to continue the investigation. You and your attorney will be invited back to see us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I want to take the agenda out of order again, and Dr. Gear, let's go ahead and get you handled. On up. This is Pat, Mr. Nine. Hi, welcome. And introduce yourself for the record. Can you please introduce yourself into the microphone for the record?
Robert Gear.
Hi. Ms. Vanderbeam, you're muted.
I've incorrectly, somebody typed my name wrong on your agenda. I just wanted to clarify that I'm not Joseph Gear. That's my grandfather. I'm Robert Gear.
I apologize for that. You have a memo before you regarding Dr. Gear's probation. And Dr. Gear is under a probation order that you issued on September 22nd, 2021. Board staff mailed that order on October 13th, and it was received by Dr. Gear's office on October 15th. In the order, he was required to complete a 1 year of probation and 12 hours of continuing education 90 days from the effective date, and undergo one record-keeping audit by a board-approved monitor. On Monday, January 3rd, the board staff received an email from Dr. Gear's practice administrator stating that he was requesting inactive or retired status, and that he was retiring effective of 12/31 of 22 because he had a heart attack on October 13th. We responded to the email and provided the paperwork for the inactive renewal. We never received that paperwork back, and so Dr. Gear did not renew his license, which would have been part of the probationary agreement, was to timely renew. He has not completed the continuing education or the record-keeping audit, but he did provide another follow-up email on July 11th that he was requesting to be released from his probationary status, and he disclosed the following information regarding his health. On October 13th, he suffered a significant cardiac event while treating patients in his office in Payson, Arizona. His staff was able to get his heart started beating again by doing CPR. He was transferred from Payson, Arizona to Honor Health Scottsdale. And his heart was not working very well, and the cardiac surgeon said he was not going to work on a vegetable. However, his two sons, both osteopathic physicians with emergency medicine, worked with the doctor, and he was responding. But because of this, his progress progressed. He made a full recovery. His cardiologist said he didn't need to see him again for 6 months. He is of the opinion he can now return to practice. He's requesting the board move his status of his license from retirement and give him an active license to practice chiropractic. He has not completed the items for the probation, which, based on the circumstances, board staff, if you'd like to amend the consent agreement and give him additional time to complete those. But there's also, since he's under a board order, if he is fit and able to practice based on the information he's provided to the board. And he did provide some supplemental information, which is in your board folders, if you need to review that. We got some more this morning in addition.
Okay. So his current status is administrative suspension?
Probation administrative suspension.
Okay. And Dr. Gear, are you able to work on patients right now?
Very carefully. Yes, I can.
Okay.
Have I? No. I died October the 13th of last year.
Welcome back.
I did. Yeah, I sent you a message this morning with some pictures and showing you why, a little bit about why I haven't been in practice this year.
How do we count your birthday now? Are you 1 year old?
Yeah. As of today, it was quite an experience. It's been a very big lesson to me in what it's like to be a patient. And I have far more compassion now than I've ever had in my life for people who are suffering, having been there myself, all the way gone and back. After all these years of life, I'll be 81 this November. Quite nice to get educated, even if it's with a sledgehammer. And I would like to continue taking care of people. I know I can still help other people.
Okay, so you're looking to get reinstated, license up to date?
Yes, I would like that. I did the continuing education last year for this year's license. And as far as I know, everything was done in a timely manner because I was unconscious, as you have in the letter today, if you had time to read that. Have you had a chance to look at that?
I know that you had serious health problems that made it difficult to comply with your board order.
Yeah, impossible. So I have, October, November, December. I can still do a little bit toward completing that requirement. You might want to give me a little more time, if necessary, in order to complete your requirements. I kind of throw myself at your hands.
Okay. Ms. Vanderbeam, so where are we with the court order and what does he need to do?
So he would need to do the 12 hours of continuing education for the board order, plus for the reinstatement. He submitted the 12 hours for his 2020 renewal. We just don't have the payment and the renewal application. So there would be that part of it, and then he would have to complete 12 hours of continuing education in addition to the other 12 hours for this year's renewal going into 2023.
Okay.
And then he would have to complete the record-keeping audit.
Okay.
Well, you have to have patience in order to complete records, don't you? And if I don't have an active license, I can't have patience. It's catch 22, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, so board members, any questions? What's your pleasure? Do you want to try to grant him an extension to requirements?
Yeah, I would be in favor of granting an extension.
So for how long?
My initial reaction is six months.
Is that long enough to get what we need?
I'll make a motion to extend the agreement 6 months.
To amend the agreement to give him an extra 6 months to complete it.
Yep.
I second the motion.
Okay, so we got a first by Dr. Knopf, second by Ms. Powell. Any further discussion? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we have four ayes that have it, so you'll be granted an extension and a chance to show us what we need. You still need to do the renewal. You still need to do the renewal packet, and you'll need to talk to board staff to get all that worked out so that you can get your license back.
Okay.
And you'll do that on a separate day.
Thank you. Could you send me an email regarding what I need to do?
Yes. Board staff will.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. So we're done with tab number 9, and we're going to go back to tab number 4. Dr. Jeffrey Floyd. Dr. Floyd, are you present? Hi. When the area is clear, you can come on up. And then you can introduce yourself for the record. Hi, welcome. Vanderbeam?
For case number 2022-028, the investigation allegations are inadequate history and examination, improper treatment or unnecessary treatment, incorrect diagnosis, and failure to maintain adequate records. Or 22... 2022-038. The allegations are inadequate history of examination, improper treatment or unnecessary treatment, and incorrect diagnosis.
Okay. So we have two cases before us, and we're going to get to the complainant shortly. Is there anything you'd like to say? We've read all the board materials that were submitted. Is there anything you'd like to say as an opening remark before we start to ask you questions?
Go
ahead. Okay. I have a couple. I'm trying to understand the relationship of you and your employer and how the referrals work and all of that. Do you do your own evaluation and before you start treating patients?
I do.
Okay. And so it looks like there's some type of medical referral that comes to you, and I saw the records on that, and then I saw some of your records. Are you actually adjusting these patients, or are you working more like with exercises and
the first complaint of H?
Okay.
RH?
Yes.
So I'm adjusting on people in that office. It's a large internal medicine office. Girls from the medical doctors there. I work with my wife, who's a physical therapist. We work there together with a physical therapy assistant, so there's three of us. The issue that I see that you're probably seeing is the evaluation that we do, then seen and signed by the supervising medical, actually done by a he electronically signs off on everything because he's a supervising physician. We have two other sets of notes or flow sheets of exercises that are done, and a quick soap note that we do, and everything, and put together. Record, then signed off by him, and that's what you wrote about with his
seat. Okay. That's helpful. And so on this particular patient, RH, did you do any spinal manipulation on her?
I did not. So, but she is a very elderly patient. She comes in with a lot of weakness, a lot of symptoms. She was put on a table from position. I just did some gentle way movements on her spinal area just to kind of see how she's moving. She seemed to do well during the course of treatment, but afterwards, obviously, she felt a lot of pain. For a very short time, we tried to help her for a referral for pain management. She did not want to start referral for doing that. She did have a prior MRI done. Did a post-MRI because she's complaining so much of the pain, and it showed that there was no significant changes. They were all stable. Analysis of the MRI.
And so how does the billing work? So you are you billing under your name, or is it under the clinic name, or
tax ID number?
Okay. Board members, any questions for Dr. Floyd?
Yes, I have a couple back here. I was just looking through the records between patient RH and patient RA, and it appeared in the notes provided the patient record for RA, which was an earlier patient going back to 2020. There was separate notes really on the chiropractic, it looks like, treatment side of it. I didn't see those similar notes with patient RH, and I was just wondering what is the difference?
So the difference was two different offices. The RA patient was in an office that I no longer have it. I had a relationship with another medical doctor there. I no longer work there. So it was a different office altogether.
Gotcha.
Another office. So there's two different offices.
Okay. That's helpful. And then in the records of patient RA, there was a couple of things. Let me just pull those up. It might just be how your health record system performs, I'm not sure. But we noticed that there were signatures of the visit dates. For example, we have you signing the note April 7th, 2020 at 11:13 a.m., and then the next note, it says that you signed the note, again, April 7th, 2020, but at 11:13 a.m., and then for another visit date, it has you signing the note, again, on April 7th at 11:44 a.m. So I was just wondering why that's printed out.
I don't think this is the most, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Notes are done in a timely fashion.
That's what I was trying to infer, so thank you for that clarification. And then on page 14, reviewing patient outcomes, we have a visit date of 3-2 of 2020 for patient RA. And there's an entry date of 4-7-2022. Is that a similar data field that just populates when you access it to print the record? So the entry date, it's not you entering that information. That would have been done much earlier than what was put on there. Okay. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
Other board members, questions for Dr. Floyd? Okay. Let's go to the complainant with the initials RH. RH, are you present? Got a call in.
Yeah, I'm not showing a call-in number in the Zoom.
Okay, patient RH, if you are on the meeting, you are muted and we cannot hear you. Last call for RH. We're going to move on to the next case then, which is 2022-038, patient with the initials RA. RA, are you present?
I am here.
Hi, welcome, Dr. Guarino. Would you like to say anything to our board? We've read all the materials. We've read your complaint. Is there anything you'd like to say at this point before my board members might have questions for you?
I don't think so.
Okay. Board members, any questions for RA?
Yeah, I get, sorry, Chair. Patient RA, I'm just trying to understand, you know, what is the most important part of you having submitted this complaint against Dr. Block?
The misdiagnosis and then subsequent incorrect treatment that could have possibly damaged me further. I have a fully ruptured tendon in my hamstring, as I'm sure you know. I was subjected to aggressive stretching. There was not any kind of, I didn't know this until later, obviously, but some serious due diligence should have been done, evaluation, something. It was my complaints and my repeated complaints and leaving and coming back and begging for an MRI that eventually showed that I had a fully ruptured tendon, but it was months later. I returned to work. I've been in severe pain. I don't know. I mean, this changed my life. I don't know if better treatment and actual diagnosis would have changed that. I'm obviously not a medical professional, but the misdiagnosis and then, again, subsequent incorrect treatment, this lack of any kind of due diligence, I feel, is my issue.
Great. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, this is Dr. Guarino along those same lines. So it looks like you treated with Dr. Floyd. Eventually, it was determined that you had a hamstring rupture.
Correct.
And it looked like you treated for about 13 visits back in March of 2020, and then there was it looked like you were released from care, and then there was like a 30 to 45 day or so period that passed by, and then I think you went back. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So did you feel like the treatment was helpful in the short term while you were treating with him?
Not particularly. Every time I left the office, I kind of felt like my leg was weaker than it had been. And when I questioned this, I was told it was because of the stretching and everything else, but it felt like when I first was hit by the car, I couldn't move my leg. I couldn't use it. I would drag myself. And then eventually it kind of worked again, but a few minutes later. And I was able to get home, get the police involved and everything else. It felt kind of like that, like it was, like when you pull something and it's weaker than it was a minute ago and you can't really use it. It always felt like that after I left the office. Just pain didn't lessen greatly. I honestly just felt like it was something I was dreading doing than it was actually helping. So I got myself discharged. And my discharge was me walking down the hall and back under Dr. Floyd's supervision was my final examination.
Okay. And so what happened after that? So then you got the MRI, you saw that that you did in fact have a hamstring rupture, and then what happened? Did you eventually get surgery?
No, I was told that surgery was too great of a risk based on the location. What happened was Dr. Floyd had called me and very sheepishly explained to me that I had a fully ruptured tendon in my hamstring and I had to see an orthopedic surgeon. So I immediately found the orthopedic surgeon, take my health insurance, and went had it checked out, and I was recommended to a completely different physical therapist. I explained what had been happening to me, and he kind of, the first doctor I spoke with, I'm sorry, I saw like 8 different doctors, so I have to get out his name. I believe it was Dr. Fishman, though. Kind of said it doesn't sound like you're getting physical therapy, and you need to go and get actual, like, therapy to train the muscles and strengthen and try to help everything around it because I was, while I met the qualifications that it had retracted 8 centimeters, I still had 2 tendons intact. So while I did meet the qualifications, they felt the risk of reward wasn't there for surgery. And
okay.
Eventually I had physical therapy at Bear Physical Therapy for probably a little bit more than 7 months. And I got, kind of like strength training and such, and they completely evaluated me, and it was entirely different. It was night and day. And then I started to recover.
Okay.
But,
so it's your feeling if this would have been caught earlier, you could have got on the right track quicker and moved on with things.
Absolutely. I feel the aggressive stretch from the beginning of the way it made my leg feel. It's one of those horrible feelings you have with hindsight where you're like, oh God, now that I know what had actually happened, I was probably getting re-injured every 2 days, 3 days. And I was going back to work in 2 weeks. I worked a physical job. I can't do it anymore. I actually had to change careers because I cannot do these things anymore. If I do stuff like that, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, what kind of work were you doing before the accident?
I was in the restaurant. I was a restaurant, everything. But
so you're at your feet walking around.
Oh, yeah. I was actually I was an hourly employee working my way back to the management. It's a very long story, but I was in a physical role. I needed to be able to move. I was wearing knee braces and stuff every day. I wasn't sure how to help myself try to do things.
So when did you return to work?
They gave me a note, and I returned 2 weeks after the accident. And they said I should be fine to go back, but it was very difficult.
I'm sorry, what month was that?
So I was injured on March 2nd, and I returned to work, I believe, the middle end of March. I don't have the exact date in front of me. I had, I believe, a 2 or 3 week note to be out of work. Because if I returned, I would have to double check. I returned, and then they immediately, almost within a couple of days, they shut us down for COVID. It was a really tough month.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to ask Dr. Floyd Do you have any comments about?
The patient's main complaints after the accident were typical hit and run from being hit by a car, neck, shoulders, mid back, upper back. He did complain of no pain. It wasn't his major complaint. That was addressed for those first 13 visits. He did want to get back to work because of financial pressure, as I understand. He needed to go back to work. Tough time, as he said, going around. He needed to go back to work to try to accommodate him as best as possible. Came for the initial 13 visits. He's also seen by my office, Dr. Mohan, a nurse practitioner as well. Up at the time that an MRI in that area was not. Except for, you know, it was 6 days when he came back, saw him for a brief amount of time, then he was referred to MRI. As a referral to.
Okay, so do you remember when he first came in and was treating, you know, sounds like the focus was neck and back and other things? Do you remember any bruising on his leg, anything that would indicate that he had a ruptured?
I have to go back to look in the, I believe he had some bruising. Arm was just a main complaint.
Okay. So, board members, any other questions? Something that you think we can deal with today, or want to continue it to a higher level of investigation?
And just real quick, Dr. Floyd, your recollection of treatment, because I think there's an allegation that there was excessive force used that made things worse. What is your recollection of the care provided to patient R.A.?
R.A., so he was therapy, consistent strength, stability, exercise, as well as chiropractic. I felt at the time not significant, probably in pain. And I'll address this, that this never really was brought to our attention to these people at that time. And until much further down the line, the personal injury kind of up in our faces.
So as it relates to the stretching specifically, you don't feel like you used excessive force?
I do not, and I wouldn't push it if his pain was causing him that much discomfort. That would be common sense not to be aggressive with any type of therapy.
Okay, thank you.
To the patient, RA, did you file a malpractice claim or anything? Is there anything pending?
No, I did not. I inquired at the hospital about doing such, but I was told to bring my complaint to the board. And because of the difficulty of proving anything, I kind of just called around. May I add something, though?
Yes.
An issue when I came in, my complaint was when I described what happened to me, is that I couldn't get up and I couldn't move my right leg, and I thought it had been broken. That was my initial complaint. I could not get up and walk. And additionally, when I was being stretched, I had to tell the doctor to stop, and my wife witnessed and also said, hey, you need to stop. Like, he's asking you. And at one point, I actually had to physically stop that from happening in the stretching because he was leaning his entire body onto the back of my leg, pressing it towards my shoulder, my knee towards my shoulder. I don't know how else you would call that. But I just wanted to make that clear.
So
my initial complaint was I could not move my right leg when I was hit by that vehicle. I could not get up out of the street and had to drive myself.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Then if I could direct the board, if you look at page 15 of the exhibits, under diagnosis, it does state difficulty in walking. So it was on the radar, but Dr. Plague was saying it wasn't the focus, and the patient's saying that's the main reason why he saw you. Okay. All right. Well, it's concerning to me, you know, for us to do our job, you need to sign every page of your records. We need to know who did the work, you know, and you know, know, for you to say that you did the evaluations that we're looking at and it's signed off by somebody else and your name isn't even on there is a concern. So, board members.
With respect to RH?
Yes. So, board members, what would you like to do in this case? Continue the investigation if you think it warrants any disciplinary action potentially or deal with it today.
My preference is to deal with it today and address the record keeping issues.
Nope. I agree with that. Want to make a motion then?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education and require, we'll put it at 8 hours of record keeping and compliance on top of the annual required for renewal. That's to be completed within 6 months.
This question, perhaps a friendly amendment, an additional 2 hours in physiotherapy?
We'll take that as a friendly amendment, yes. There'll be 10 total hours.
Oh, in what? I'm sorry, that's physiotherapy, thank you.
For physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedures?
There we go.
That's the one.
Okay. So we have a first and a second. Is there any further discussion? We have a second.
Second motion.
Second by Ms. Paul. Further discussion.
Okay. And is this for both cases?
Yes, this would be for both.
Okay. Perfect.
There wouldn't be double the amount it's to cover both.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Right. Have it. So you're going to be issued a non-disciplinary order for continuing education. You're going to get that information in writing, and if you have any questions for the board, you can contact them on another day. Thank you. All right. Thank you, RA, for your testimony and helping us get to the bottom of what happened. We're going to move on now to tab number 5, matter of Dr. Jeanette Kramer. Harvest. Okay. Hi, Dr. Kramer. Can you please introduce yourself for the record?
Hi. Yeah, I'm Dr. Jeanette Kramer.
Hi. Thank you. Okay. Let's get a board brief.
The investigative facts and allegations are inadequate history and examination, improper treatment, or unnecessary treatment.
Okay. Ms. Carvis, do you have any opening remarks on behalf of your client?
Yes, just briefly, and then she's happy to answer any questions that the members of the board and then we'll adjust. As well. Dr. Kramer has been in Heisman chiropractic examination after reveal any changes prior hernia surgery, followed up with a couple of different providers, finding other. But hernia in the context of I'll be reported to the practice of the finding that we had there was no finding further issues. Technical record keeping as Dr. Kramer explained, was unwilling to fill out all of the incident work. This one in hindsight, she probably should have on all of my paperwork, and I'm sorry for that. I am help both of you stay with the problem focused. Quite a very limited treatment, no chiropractic injury. I believe that not really any harm to the patient.
Thank you, Ms. Carter. Dr. Kramer, can you, is there anything you'd like to say at this point?
Based on, I couldn't hear what Mandy had said, but based on when BS came in, I went off my standard protocol because I really, he had said he felt he was, had low back pain, general pain, and felt disconnected. And so I really felt compassionate towards him because I've been in a similar situation. So I went ahead and proceeded without having the formal paperwork and instead only used his verbal history.
The treatment you provided, do you recall, it sounded like you were doing some kind of abdominal palpation. Was that can you describe that part of it?
Yeah, so during, you can use, there's a device I have called a PEMF, which is pulsed electromagnetic therapy, and you can use that to diagnose whether or not a muscle will engage properly. And so you use that on the psoas muscle, and so I did that on the right, and then I went over to the left to also start working. And so I use about anywhere from 1 to 3 pounds of pressure depending on the specific area. And so it's, and then I can also feel in there whether or not there's specific restrictions, like adhesions or scar tissue that's contributing to the patient's complaint.
Okay, so it sounds like this patient sought you out because of laser therapy? Or
correct.
How did that happen? How did they find you?
Correct.
Okay, so that was their reason for coming in and okay. Board members, any questions for Dr. Kramer?
Yes, Dr. Kramer, this is Dr. Steve Knopf. I'm not very familiar with PEMF therapy. Can you explain what that therapy is and what that does?
Sure. So pulse electromagnetic therapy, there's different types that are used. The type I have is called, it's physician guided. And so what it does is it actually puts electrons back into the cell to help repair any damaged tissue or break up adhesions. If you've got something acute, it'll bring in circulation to decrease the inflammatory response.
And you said that you'd use this on both sides of the patient, so as?
Correct.
Throughout his time? Okay. All the questions I have for now. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Powell.
Yes. I'm interested in your statement about having to leave the room because there was an overlap in appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain, did he have an appointment that day?
Yes, he did.
Okay. So did you complete the, this is unattended therapy, is that right?
That's correct.
So you could leave the room?
Correct.
Okay. Let's see, one other question I have. Did you ever explain your findings to the patient?
I did.
Okay. Because you made a comment I should have explained before about my examination findings, my original exam findings to him.
That was the last phone call that we had. In reference to that. So I explained to him my findings originally, and then looking back, I should have explained my findings again at our last phone call.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Kramer, this is Dr. Guarino. I also don't know what that therapy was that you did. Where did you learn how to do that?
There's a chiropractor who teaches that. And he's actually in Scottsdale.
Okay. All right. Board members, any other questions for Dr. Kramer? Let's shift over to the complainant with the initials B as in boy, S as in Sam. B.S., are you present? B.S., are you present?
Is
muted?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry, the host had me muted.
Hi, welcome. I can hear you now.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, do you want to add some clarity to what we've just heard?
Anything
you'd like to say?
Yes, sir, I would. First of all, I want to thank the board for their time today. I understand there's a lot of cases that you're seeing, including mine. I have been working through Mr. Ryan Dominick with the Arizona Examiner's Board, and I submitted over several months information regarding my injury and my report. There was a person that had been working prior to Mr. Dominick. I believe she retired. So I had collaborated with Mr. Dominick to make sure that he had everything up to date, and then I've also submitted several things that I wanted to have the board be able to see and review. I just wanted to confirm, do you have the original letter that I submitted in? Also, I submitted in visual pictures of my body and my torso with multiple scars. And then I also submitted in to Mr. Dominick anatomy chart based on what Dr. Kramer said that she was trying to access inside my body. I just wanted to confirm that the board did have this.
Yes.
And then my most recent, I apologize, but I've been requesting this for over a month, and it takes time for HIPAA laws, et cetera, to be able to send things in. But I also had some additional notes from a surgeon that I had seen, Dr. Thomas Gillespie down in the Phoenix. I just want to make sure you received that because that was recent.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to just take a few minutes. Is it okay that if I read my letter? Because I wrote this letter, there's a reason for kind of the way that I'd like to proceed. I wrote this letter over a year ago after I was injured by Dr. Kramer, and obviously I've had a year afterwards of dealing with an injury. So I wanted to read what I wrote after the injury, and then I kind of want to extrapolate on that a minute, if I could.
Go ahead.
Okay, on July 4th, I went to see Dr. Jeanette Kramer. when I went to see Dr. Kramer, I actually called her office ahead of time of my appointment and spoke to her admin staff and let them know that I had been injured, that I'd had surgeries, and that I actually was not interested in a physical evaluation. I just wanted to use cold laser. I live in a small town in northern Arizona called Prescott, and I wanted to see if I could find this, because I've had this treatment before and had success with it, and it's not manipulative. It's not, in fact, the person doesn't even touch you while they're administering it. They said that she actually checked with Dr. Kramer and said, yes, let me find out. She put me on hold for 5 minutes, came back and said, yep, she will see you. Even though we're not going to do a physical evaluation on you, we'll just do the cold laser. So I came in, I paid a fee. During my first meeting with Dr. Kramer, I did explain in detail, both verbally and physically, showed her several areas of my body that were severely injured. I shattered my shoulders, had multiple surgeries there. From serving my country, I injured my spine and had to have artificial disc replacement. So I have a very large 5-inch vertical scar on the anterior portion of my torso where they've had to do surgery down my vertebrae and put in artificial discs. Also, that was performed in 2005 in Germany. In 1998, I actually had a hernia replacement, and as many males and I believe females have as well, I had mesh implant put in there, so I have a pretty large visible 4-inch open surgery scar that is in real estate relationship, literally less than an inch and a half away from my 5-inch, very large, very noticeable vertical scar in my stomach. I showed her all these things. I actually pulled my shirt up to show her. I even pulled my trousers down a tiny bit to show her my hernia scar. So I let her know all this before she did anything to my body. One thing I did notice, too, is her paperwork when I went into her office was a very pretty substantial amount of paperwork. And I've been through the medical system, unfortunately, a lot with a lot of injuries. It felt like it was, in my opinion, it was very redundant. It had a lot of things about food and the temperatures of food and liquids, et cetera. I understand this might be valuable, and I'm sure it is, but I was going in there just for cold laser therapy. So I mentioned to them, hey, this is something I can fill out later. I had gotten to the appointment a little late. And they told me that's fine, so they never had me fill out the paperwork, which I probably shouldn't have noticed right off the bat. It wasn't a good sign. She did not ask for any of my medical records, even though I mentioned to her that I had had substantial surgeries and implants. I have multiple implants inside my body, both down in my abdominal area where I had hernia repair in 1998, as well as my lower lumbar. I had my L4-5 and L5-S1 replaced by artificial discs in Germany in 2005. My first session with her was basically a cold laser treatment. She put the laser on, she put the apparatus above my body, left the room, and didn't come back until the end of the session, which was about 40, 45 minutes. I did not feel any difference, but, it's something that normally would take some time. I had considered maybe coming back for some additional treatment. She asked me to come back. She said she felt she could help me. When I came back, this is pretty much the whole reason we're here. On that meeting, returning to the office, I'm going to read from the letter that I sent you guys. Returning to the office, she said that she felt she could help me. She didn't specify anything that she was going to do or any techniques at that point. She also hadn't asked for any medical records. She is, if I understand it correctly, she's a chiropractor, also an acupuncturist. Is that correct, sir? Is she a licensed acupuncturist and chiropractor?
Board staff, can you verify that?
The reason I'm asking this is because I noticed double diplomas in her office that insinuated that she has both those licenses.
Okay, I'm not sure why that.
She does have the acupuncture certificate.
She does have an acupuncture certificate.
Okay. For this board, yes.
Okay, thank you. She didn't specify anything that she was going to do or any techniques. She asked me to take off my shirt and lay on the table. She mentioned this EMPF, I believe, which is something I've never heard of. I've been through the medical system, unfortunately, a lot over the years. from military service and I'm familiar with a lot of different techniques and a lot of different types of medical practice. I had heard that while she was working on me, she had me remove my shirt, she had me lay down on the table. One thing that I thought was interesting was she had a gun that people, some chiropractors I have been to, some that use this, and instead of like manual force thrust, they use a gun. She gave me a correction on the back kind of immediately before I even laid down on the table. Again, I thought that was kind of concerning because she didn't ask for any x-rays or anything like that, and didn't have any medical records, and had, at that point hadn't even filled out any of, asked me to formally on my second appointment now, to fill out any additional paperwork so she could understand my anatomy a little bit better, or some prior surgeries, et cetera. Once I was laid down on the table, on my torso, as I mentioned, I had very noticeable scars. I had actually mentioned this to her during both appointments. She had me remove my shirt. I was laid down horizontally, and that's when she kind of started doing her palpitations. I thought she was just kind of getting some, you know, logistics of things on my body. Something that was very concerning, and unfortunately I should have gotten up unless as soon as she mentioned it. I had already expressed to her two times and showed her the scars in my body, and if the board could review that picture, it's pretty noticeable surgery areas in the torso. They're also very close together, which means there's significant scar tissue in there. Something that she mentioned during her discussion to you was that her EMTF machine reads things and tells whether there's scar tissue or not. To say that there's no scar tissue or she didn't notice a lot of scar tissue would be, I think, a gross injustice. One, I've had several surgeries in the same area, and where they're going down through the front of my torso all the way to my vertebrae, this is to say that I don't have a significant amount of scar tissue there would be a complete misjustice. While I was laying down, she did not explain or express any techniques to me or anything that she wanted to do as far as actual manual treatments, which she did not say she was going to do on me. I never gave her any permission. In fact, the exact opposite. When I scheduled, again, to backtrack, when I scheduled the appointment, I specifically said I had been injured prior by other practitioners. I've had multiple surgeries. I have implants inside my body, multiple implants, and I'm not a fan of any kind of adjustments. She mentioned that she had this machine that could work on me, and that it was very non-invasive and it wouldn't damage my body and could help her get a better read to how to heal me. While she was talking to me and accepting my body to kind of go, you know, kind of just palpitating, with my shirt off and my trousers, you know, extended down a tiny bit, so you can clearly see the scars, and that's why I showed the board the picture. I wanted them to see that this is, you know, a very visible injury that was replaced by repair by surgery.
I don't mean to be rude. I need you to summarize and wrap it up for us because keep it relevant to your complaints, please.
Yes, sir. Give me 2 minutes. During that time, she asked me, "What is this scar?" And at that point, with a ridge hand, pushed directly over the area on my torso where I have where I've had surgery and have an implant. During that motion, I reeled up in pain. I actually yelled. I had my leg up, and one of the things that I thought was really, really concerning was after I just explained to her how I'd been injured before, I've had surgeries. Her response to her patient was put your leg down. I had a big problem with that. I probably should have gotten up and left at that point. The damage was done. I didn't really know what to do after that. I submitted in the picture regarding the psoas because I wanted you to understand how deep she pushed and how physically hard she pushed into the body. The psoas major and psoas minor is a very large muscle connecting, I'm sure you know this already, that connects from the vertebrae or the L2 all the way down through the hip through the groin area. It has been an extremely, extremely long process, and I am still injured, and I have not gotten any relief since seeing Dr. Jeanette Kramer. I will let you know that she was aware that she injured me, so I'd like to ask the board specifically a question. When a doctor is aware that they've injured a patient, is there any protocol that the doctor is supposed to follow?
So I can answer that. You know, anytime that we think a patient is injured, there could be some follow-up questions. It just depends on the severity and interpretation. You know, we lay our hands on patients all day long. The work that we do does not feel good all the time, so it's very common for someone to say that something hurts in the middle of the treatment, and it can be standard. It just depends on what body part's being worked on. There's a lot of variables around that.
Okay.
But thank you for your testimony.
Well, I need another 60 seconds because I wanted to let you know that I've been to 6 doctors and surgeons. Every single doctor that I've ever explained the story to said that was absolutely something that is unadvisable. I haven't even been able to have a surgery repair after having an MRI finding of a hernia, a recurrent hernia, because of my surgery for my artificial disc. Typically, they would do a laparoscopic procedure to go behind the muscle, but because I already have had surgery there, I can't get this fixed. So I've been to pain management clinics. I've been to acupuncture clinics for relief. I've spoken to 2 doctors in the emergency room in the VA, a Dr. Barraza, a Dr. Thomas Gillespie with Dignity Health, who is a hernia specialist surgeon, Dr. Cooks with Pinnacle Pain and Spine out of Scottsdale, Dr. Katie Borchett, and a Dr. Robert Ben-Hurry. None of these doctors thought that was a good idea, and I did look into it legally. Unfortunately, in today's litigious society, they did not feel that it's about a value to represent the case because it's too expensive. The case was not enough damages. So I'm a patient that went in to get some help, told the doctor that I had been injured by other practitioners before, had multiple surgeries, head implants, showed it to her, explained
it to her. Well, you shouldn't have called, you fucking idiot.
I'm sorry?
Hey, let's talk one at a time. I don't know who just chimed in over there, but I need you to mute yourself. That was who?
They mute.
Okay. All right. So,
in conclusion, I just wanted to let you know I went to a doctor that I felt did a maneuver on a patient with knowing that they had surgery there, knowing that they had an implant there, knowing that they've been injured, knowing that they're in pain when they went in there, never asked any questions, never explained their technique on how she's doing it, and it's left me now, you know, I'm still functional, of course, but I'm in pain 24 hours a day. I don't have any way to relieve the pain. What she basically did was tear through scar tissue, and damage the genitofemoral nerve, as well as also creating a small hernia.
Okay, I understand you feel like she injured you. Now let's move on. Dr. Kramer, were you trying to palpate into the belly of the psoas muscle, or can you explain that? Patient BS has submitted an anatomical drawing to us that shows the full length of the psoas muscle, and I want to know if you were trying to
poke around
at the insertion point in the hip, or if you were trying to get to the belly of the psoas muscle through 4 inches of intestine, or did you do this or not do this? Tell me what you think happened.
So when I was working on his left side, I did see the scars, and I was aware what they were from, and but that doesn't preclude me from working on scar tissue. So I was palpating around the ASIS, which is iliacus and psoas. So you can do both at the same time, so I could see if there's significant scar tissue and whether or not those muscles are active using the PEMF. You will get a response in from the leg.
Okay, thank you. All right, board members, any questions?
Just so I'm clear, Dr. Kramer, the intent was just palpation. It was for really exam and evaluation purposes. It wasn't for treatment purposes. You weren't trying to do trigger point work or strip muscle.
No, I don't generally do that part of work, the trigger point or stripping muscles, that significant type of work. It was more for evaluation to see how much restriction there was in the scars, in the scar tissue in that area, and then using the TMS to see if that was active or not.
Okay. BS, I see you raising your hand. Go ahead and unmute and talk to us.
Thank you, sir. I disagree with that statement that Dr. Kramer made, and this is why. When I asked her what she was trying to do, she told me specifically that she was trying to access my psoas muscle, and also she had mentioned to me that I didn't push that hard into you, and quote-unquote, I've done this technique with many other people, and they have never gotten hurt from it. That's specifically what she said to me when she injured me. My last little statement would be, I want you to be aware, the board to be aware, that she had me come back multiple times. I think I went there for a total of 3 treatments. I don't have my bank records right now, but I believe I did go there for a total of 3 treatments. She did not charge me for those treatments because she was aware that she injured me. But I do want you to recognize that she did know that she was doing a technique. She verbally communicated to me that she had used this technique before without injury, but had not asked permission from me, her patient, or explained to me what she was even trying to do. So that's
all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So, board members, do you feel like you need more information? Do you feel like you have enough information to make a decision on what we're going to do? Or do you feel like if this would rise to disciplinary action that we would continue this to review or another venue?
For me, this is really around documentation and proper intake. Patient, I think we could have avoided some of these things. When it comes to what happened the day of, you know, it's hard to have any kind of substantial evidence one way or another when you have two conflicting stories, and so we have to just look at the information that we have in front of us. And when I do that, it looks like intake and documentation is where my mind is at. And so with that being said, I would make the motion to issue a non-disciplinary order for CE, 6 hours of documentation, and 4 hours of patient management.
Okay.
To be completed within 6 months. On top of what's required for renewal.
I second the motion.
I'll second. Discussion, board members. Okay, I'm going to call for the question. Unmute your mics, please. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, the ayes have it. That concludes the matter for today. And Dr. Kramer, if you have any questions about what we've decided, you can contact the board on another day. Patient Diaz, thank you so much for your testimony to help us get to the bottom of what we could understand about this today. And I'll move on to our next tab. But first, we're going to take a 10-minute break, recess, if anybody needs to do that, and we'll come back at it. Thank you. Oh, so any of the newly licensed chiropractors that are sitting in on our board meeting, you don't have to attend anymore. You've hit the 3-hour mark. So thank you. All right. Time is 12:21. We're back to open session after the recess. And we have moved on to step number 6. Matter of fact, Michael, is it Schwamp?
Yep.
Okay. Can you please introduce yourself to the record?
Dr. Michael Schwamp.
Your representative?
Yeah, please, I'll be there.
All right, welcome. Anthony, can you get a board read?
The investigative facts and allegations are patient abandonment, improper treatment or unnecessary treatment, failure to properly supervise, failure to maintain adequate records, and improper billing.
Okay, Mr. Plotkin, do you have any opening remarks?
Two. First note that I shouldn't be Yeah. Also, we'll provide a copy of Brian's investigative report of recommendations and initiated interview. Dr. Schwamp is here to address every one of those. So, brief preliminary remarks. I view the issue was CERN had to do with women. I just told the voices show that she asked for reduction plan. Read the original plan that was recommended by the doctor to help her, given her condition. She wanted the cut in half, said okay. That was after, I think, she wanted another reduction later, said okay. So it went from $4,200 down to $1,400. All of the doctor's consent was she wanted to change it. She didn't use all of that plan. There was $300 left over, unused. That's been refunded. I think that's all covered. Wasn't provided the exercise therapy after the first visit. Those reflect just the opposite. Continued until visit. Her recollection is faulty. The other thing I would say is each of these complaints presents a teaching opportunity, learning opportunity for us and doctors. But they don't all call some sort of disciplinary action. That matter should simply be here for her to make that decision. That's our position. So, turn it over to Dr. Schlenz to go ahead and address the various allegations of the state. Get into too much detail to have a talk and we move on.
Thank you. Dr. Schlenz, anything you'd like to say at this point?
Yeah, I wanted to thank the board members for hearing me. Basically, I wanted to state that the allegations are all should be dismissed. To my knowledge, the patient DI came into the office 15 times. Never during the course of care did she communicate any of the issues by what she complained to the board. During her visit, she continually expressed through the daily encounter forms the notes positive improving progression. Date 4-7-22, DI states, feeling improvement through her right shoulder and upper back. Again, on 4-9-22, DI states, brushed and blow-dried her hair for the first time in 3 weeks. DI came in for her initial visit on 3-26-21, her ROF on 4-2-21. She agreed to the recommendation of care, paying the $4,200 on care credit. 3 visits later, she requested a refund for half of her care due to other medical concerns, which on 4-9, we refunded her $2,000 back on care credit, which can be seen in the monthly summary report. We continued on with care when 5 visits later, on 4-21, DI requested another change to her care for it to be cut in half again, citing she had financial concerns because she needed to have surgery, skin cancer on her right lower leg, noted in subjective section 421, daily encounter note. Once again, we refunded DI, $800. On 421, noted on care credit monthly summary report. At this point, DI is on a 20-visit alternative care recommendation costing $1,400. Daily encounter note 419, DI stays able to sit and knit over the weekend for 3 hours without getting stiff or sore. Also, 428, she had a full night of sleep last night, and it was the first night in a long time she has done that. And I can go on showing other dates if we wish to do that, but I don't want to bore you. In our office, we have an open-day spinal manipulation area with 4 tables. We have a therapeutic exercise area with 4 pieces of equipment and a desk for a chiropractic assistant. At the time, another licensed chiropractor by Dr. T.G. and myself, Dr. M.S., and a chiropractic assistant were there to demonstrate, observe, and help the eye sit on a wobble chair for 3 to 5 minutes, going over a series of low back and pelvic stretches therapeutic exercises. We also did exercises for her neck, upper back, and mid-back for about 5 to 8 minutes. Dr. T.G. and myself, M.S., signed each daily encounter form by our last initial, their name. Spinal manipulations and therapeutic exercises were conducted only 5 out of 15 times, and basically DI instructed, we were instructing her to do these on every visit when she came in. And after a while, she just suddenly stopped. She only followed through with 4 of the visits, doing the physical stretches and exercises. and so we just assumed it was from some other medical concern. Never during the course of care did she communicate any displeasure or frustration with the environment of her care or the lack of improvement of her care or the quality of her care. She just stopped coming in. Nothing was said to my staff or myself only until 5:26 she requested a refund for any unused care, which we refunded $300 on that day. I thought she was following her habits of past history, asking for a refund due to some financial concern. Not until 4 or 5 weeks later she wrote a letter to our office expressing her unhappiness. She was clearly venting her displeasure about no time, refunds. At no time did she ask for a refund for $1,100. She never asked for a refund during that letter. We did alternative care recommendations twice for her, and she completed 75% of her care. I spoke to her on the phone on 7/14/21, and we had a very cordial conversation. She voiced her displeasure in waiting for getting adjusted, the number of people in the office, but she liked the staff, and she kind of reckoned the office to a railroad station. I explained that they had no knowledge she felt that way until her letter, and I offered her other times or days she could have come in, and she actually thanked me for the call. She actually wanted to offer me advice. Again, she did not ask anything else at that time. Thinking the matter resolved, I thought I said goodbye, and we ended on a pleasant conversation. Not until 7/29/21, 2 weeks after our phone conversation, she writes on instant messenger to our office, more unhappiness, more displeasure about her experience. My staff politely replies back, the doctors are not in today. They even offer, would you like a phone call? Which BI never replies back, yes or no. So at this time, I'm looking back at this trend of happy, progressively improving BI. I see she's in the office, she feels happy. She asks for changes and recommendations and refunds, and we give that to her each time. Then she's upset, angry, when writing a letter dated 6/29. Then she's cordial and nice when talking on the phone, and we actually end the conversation thinking it's all handled. Then she's angry and mean, DI, when communicating on instant messenger. So at this point, I feel I didn't know how else to address it. I left it in her situation where she could ask for another phone call or we could meet in person to resolve it. But she never asked for that. So that's where I feel that, in summary, that the allegations should be dismissed, because we were in an open day room observing her, helping her, the doctors, the doctor TG and myself. I feel that we were there to help her get better, and she noted several times improvement. We signed each note by our initial of our last name, and we have the ledger stated on a monthly credit statement where we issued her refunds. So I know that, again, looking back, I'm not perfect. I care about my patients, and I still care about DI, but again, seeing this common trend she's under, I'm very concerned about her well-being.
Thank you. So my question for you is regarding the supervision of exercises in your office. How does that work?
Basically, we have an open day physical therapy area, and there's a chiropractic assistant that sits there and that moves around the room to help the individual with
the attendant.
Yes.
Okay. Board members, any questions for Dr. Schlund?
Yes, I have a couple, and I think you answered it in part through your initial address, so thank you. When I'm looking at soap notes for the day, I see a provider name consistently of your name, and then I see that there's a Dr. G, for example, that is signing their initials, it looks like, in the plan section of each note. Why does your name show as the provider at the top of every visit?
Through Cairo Touch, my name is on the system. I'm there, but the caring doctor initials at the bottom, their adjustment.
Okay. Is that in part because you didn't get, like, a second license to have another doctor on, so you just wanted to only have one license?
Correct.
A doctor, multiple doctors to log in under one license.
Okay.
I'm not sure that that's probably best practice. But all right. And then next, there looks like it, initially there was an 80-visit treatment plan for patient DI. Can you just walk me through, you know, in your evaluation, what do you think justifies an 80-visit?
She had severe, moderate to severe degeneration in her spine on the radiograph. And looking at her exam, she had many positive findings on her orthopedic tests for her shoulders, range of motion, spinal palpation. So she was a older age group, and healing just takes time in that regard to stabilize and help ligaments in the spine get back into a more stable, strengthened position.
Okay. Is 80 visits not unusual for patients in your practice?
No, it is unusual. We don't have very many.
And then through that 80 visit treatment plan that was prescribed, I know care was cut short. What does your typical reevaluation look like in care plans that have 80 plus visits?
We would do a progress exam around visit 18 or 20.
Okay, and then beyond that, is it every 20 visits, or what is that usually?
Yeah, so then we would do another progress check, probably around visit 35 to 40, followed up with maybe a midpoint x-ray.
Okay.
To assess if there's any positive changes in the spinal alignment, usually lateral views.
That's all I have for questions. Thank you.
Other board members? Irvinson?
Sure. I just have a few questions. Who is Ruben Fierros?
He was a CA in my office.
Okay. And we have a letter dated September 22nd, 2021. Was that, it's addressed to whom it may concern. Is that addressed to the board?
Correct.
Okay. And are you aware when he was in contact with DI?
Yes.
Because he mentioned DI was a patient who was in our office, and she was very pleased with how our office operated. Do you know if that's something she said to him?
Yeah, I've actually spoken with DI numerous times on each encounter that I was working with her, and she was saying positive things.
Okay. Those are the only questions I have.
Okay. Ms. Powell, any questions? So I just want to point out it's not appropriate to write Dr. S or Dr. G. It doesn't tell us who did the work. It might be useful for you internally, but as a board, you don't know who to hold accountable, how many doctors you have in your office, and that kind of thing. Your name on the soap notes, it looks like you did the work, right?
Right.
Let's move to the complainant with the initials DI. DI, can you hear us?
Yes.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. Guarino, chair for the board. We would like to hear your side of the story right now. Do you have anything you would like to say before my board members ask you any questions?
Absolutely. When I went in there, I'm nearly 80 years old. My biggest problem is my balance. Okay? Not once did he mention that when he was talking to you.
What was your biggest problem?
My balance.
Your balance?
Balancing.
Okay.
Sorry, it's balancing. Yeah. When I went there the first time, or the second time, I went into the back room where they were showing you how to do the exercises. I did that 3 times. Then I was told that room is too full. Can I do the exercises at home seen I don't have to use any of the equipment. He doesn't know that because he doesn't correspond with his staff. Then I had said, we come in and I've seen for 6 minutes and I'm gone. He said, that's my, you people, I think there's six people sitting in the waiting room with his appointment at the same time. And his answer was, well, you people come late and early. I said, really? You take no responsibility for the way this office is run? And he totally, totally ignored me. He blamed everyone in that office except himself. I went on that equipment, balancing the equipment for my back once. Every time I went in and asked him or that other doctor if I could go on it, that only has one machine, and it was full, and there was no room for me. Maybe next week, maybe next week. And when I complained about it, oh, well, next time, next week we're getting another chiropractor in. That's never once did this man take responsibility for anything. He blames his staff, he blames the customers, he blames everything. And that's not what he's talking to you about. And that's what really upset me. Being spoken down to by somebody. I've never had that happen to me. I'm a teacher, I do not speak down to people, and that's exactly how I feel.
Okay, so this is Dr. Guarino, and thank you for your testimony. I just want you to be aware that we do not get involved in billing disputes. And,
I'm not interested in billing. I'm interested in my balance.
Okay, thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for DI? Paul?
Yes, DI, how many times did you use the equipment?
Once. When they showed me how to do it. It's a regular round
ball. Only one time?
Yes, it's a little round ball. You stand on it and you hold the ball. Okay, I did it once. You see, I'm getting this disrespect again. What can I tell you? It's very sad that men put down to women.
I'm sorry, I meant no disrespect to you whatsoever.
No, no,
please forgive
me. When somebody else was talking, I did not interfere.
That's all the questions I have.
Okay. I'm just going to ask.
Yeah, I don't have any questions at this point for patient DI.
Okay.
I will never, ever put my foot in a chiropractic office ever again or tell anybody to because of the way I was treated and spoken to.
Okay, thank you, D.I.
And I think that he should pay the consequences of the way that he blames his staff and his customers and his back office and everything else. But he didn't take responsibility.
All right, board members, like to do in this case.
I have a follow-up question for Dr. Schlemp. Regarding the patient flow in your office, I know you made the claim that she did receive some physical therapeutics in your office and was doing some exercising and stretching of about 5 times during the visit. Is there any validity to her claims from your perspective that you sometimes have to bump patients because there's maybe the equipment is all being used at some time and they might have to wait, or is that what is that typically look like in your practice?
There's no validity in that. She's referring to the balance board. She used the balance board one time.
I cannot speak to somebody who lies. I really and truly can't. I would like to get to the guy in his back office who told you, please do your
Again, we have a physical therapist back there. We have 3 to 4 wobble chairs. We have 2 to 3 balance boards. We have tables. We have people doing therapeutic stretches, and the CA walks around. We have a flow of about 5 jump seats. So people come back, they can wait in the front area, they can come back, start their stretches,
We hold people up, but we never have over about 6 to 8 people in the area at a time. Now, people could be sitting on the jump seat, but far as in the physical therapy area. Numerous times she got up, numerous times we helped her, and she just walked out the office stating, I don't have time for that. Just walked out. Numerous times, I can't communicate with somebody who, and again, not always positive.
Thank you.
Size of my adjusting room is probably the equivalent to this open area here, and that same exact size is next to it with a half pony wall. And you can walk on one side or on the other side. Flows in from one area, patients go into the stretching therapeutic area, they set their things down and come to the jump seats and then come into the adjusting bay.
Okay. Thank you.
You know what? I am so disgusted with this conversation with him. He doesn't know what's going on.
Okay, we need to speak one at a time, or else these meetings don't work.
The guy in the back room begged me not to come.
Board members.
But he's not going to tell you the truth.
Looking at what we have in front of us right now, my concern is just, you know, the record keeping and the 80 treatment visit plan, I think is excessive, and I don't think was justified based on patient presentation. So my recommendation is a move to issue non-disciplinary CE. In record keeping and patient management, 2 hours record keeping and 6 hours in patient management. Be completed within 6 months and on top of the credits required for renewal.
And also, when you walk in,
okay, so we got a first and a second. Any further discussion, board members?
Just say one thing. When you walk in,
patient DI, I need you to stop talking.
To be completed within
6 months.
You know what?
Okay. Calling for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And I'm going to be
Are there any opposed? Okay. None. So the ayes have it. So we're done with Dr. Schlemp's case for today. Yeah, I thank you for your testimony. And thank you.
Thank you.
We issued instructions in writing from the board. If you have any questions, you can go ahead and contact the board on another day. Okay, we're on to tab number 8 now, Dr. Brunel. Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
Help for the record, please.
My name is Jesus Bernal.
Thank you.
Before you have a memo from board staff regarding Dr. Bernal's probationary status and his probation. He is requesting to have you review his board order under Section 6 of it, which is the acquittal or dismissal of criminal charges. He contends that the original convictions were set aside. And you'll see in his statements, he stated his charges were vacated. And when we reviewed the documentation provided by Dr. Bernal that we subsequently verified for ourselves, he did sign a plea agreement on July 29th of 2020 that states the following. The plea was the defendant agrees to plead guilty to the following counts, count 4, fraudulent schemes and artifices, a class 2 felony, in violation of ARS Section 12-2310 and Section 13-303, committed on or about June of 2016 through June of 2017. In addition, they added the factual basis without admitting to the essential elements of any other crime or guilty of any other crime. The defendant admits that he provided false information to the jury through his testimony at the trial. Dr. Bernal did commit fraudulent schemes and artifices for providing aid and thereby acting as an accomplice to Maria Hernandez, and that he knew that she was an unlicensed dentist by renting her space to practice dentistry. In that, he has not presented to the board or this board staff any documents or records that reflect that he was acquitted of the criminal conviction, but rather provided us information that he entered into a plea agreement for a Class 2 felony. Additionally, the section says that if he can, that if he could provide documentation that even without the plea or the guilty charge, that it would not be considered a violation of the board statutes and rules, that we would be able to dismiss it. However, ARS Section 32.9.45 says unprofessional conduct as it relates to AACR 749224, having a professional connection with lending one's name to or billing on behalf of an illegal practitioner or chiropractor or any illegal practitioner of any healing art. The respondent has provided no documentation or evidence that he did not knowingly aid Maria Hernandez in practicing illegal dentistry by renting her space. In addition, board staff would like to point out that he was potentially providing false or misleading information to the board. The correspondence with board staff, he states submissions were vacated or the case was dismissed. I provided you all of that correspondence. In regards to the board order, to have his license taken off of suspension, he had to meet certain requirements. That was he had to submit and pay for the cost of the investigation. He has completed that. He has taken and passed the EBAS examination. He has not taken the steps necessary to reinstate his license. While this order was in place, his license was on suspension. The renewal status was stayed, and so he was not required to submit the renewals. However, once he was no longer incarcerated, he needed to pay all of the outstanding renewal fees and submit a renewal application. He has not paid those fees or submitted a renewal application, and I've requested that multiple times.
Okay. So you're doubly suspended right now. You failed to renew your license, and so you're on administrative suspension for that, and then you're also see the terms of your probation order from the past. You see videos of you adjusting people's feet on Instagram and in your stretch clinic. So what do you have to say for yourself?
That's interesting. That's very, very interesting. Number one, unless that's a new interpretation, I was under no idea that there was supposed to be renewal fees paid if I'm not applying to renew. I was under the impression that it was an optional situation about renewing, number one. Number two, the requirements stated are specifically, based on my interpretation and the way that I read it, were if I was going to submit a renewal based with probation. But I requested, and once I read it very carefully, I said, no, I'm not just trying to renew based on my release, because it says upon your release, you can, it didn't say you must, it didn't say you will, it said you can request a renewal, and it said based on these conditions. But number six, which is what I stated in my emails, was it said I have the right to exercise my request for I don't know what it's called. Basically, to remove this order. So those are those issues. Next, I have done absolutely zero adjusting. Zero adjusting. I'm not sure if y'all are familiar with Stretch Med, Stretch Lab, Stretch Zone. There are stretch clinics in which there are massage therapists, personal trainers, chiropractors, just people off the street who provide assisted stretching. That's it. Stretching. No adjustments, nothing like that. And because I thought this may arise, I made sure that anybody that I take care of signed a waiver that said, I understand clearly that Jesus Bernal is not a licensed chiropractor, and I personally went to Stretch Zone, Stretch Med, to get treated, and they make you sign that says, we do not provide chiropractic care, we do not do adjustments, all we do is assisted stretching. That they do not diagnose, they don't do anything, because I was like, well, what is this certification needed to do stretching? And so on my research and signing the paperwork from Stretch Zone and Stretch Med that they're not adjusting me, they're simply stretching me, then I said, well, then there's no jurisdiction by the board for somebody stretching. So the Instagram videos, Dr. Moreno, that you've seen, and maybe the ladies and gentlemen of the board, show absolutely no adjustments. Nobody getting adjusted.
Okay, well, they do, and there's one where you have a patient sitting on a table, and you grab on their foot, and you traction it out, and you give it a little extra. All right, so there's that, but then there's a whole bunch of videos of you setting up adjustments on people, but then not actually pushing through. So you could say that those are stretches, but they sure look like you're taking somebody to the end range lockout and then just hanging out and then the video edit.
No, absolutely not. And again, I agree. And that's why I made sure that everybody signed that waiver and everybody knows that.
And in your testimony, it says Dr. Bernal.
Uh-huh.
Somebody put up, and it's on your website, the testimony says it's marketing yourself as a chiropractor through the testimonial.
Never. Never anywhere does it say, doctor, my chiropractor, doctor, nowhere. And I was very careful about that, very, very careful. Nowhere do I say chiropractic. Nowhere do I say, come get your adjustment. Nowhere do they say, oh, he adjusted me. If anything, I tell people specifically, please make sure that you are very clear that this is your stretching. I'm no longer adjusting.
Okay, so what would you call that axial traction on the foot that I just described to you?
That axial traction, and what you say that it was like I don't recall that. It's a stretch. Now, again, maybe because of the editing, and it seems like there's like...
Should we pull the video up?
Yeah.
Sure.
Frank, can you pull the video?
So I would call it stretching, Dr. Green, to answer your question. Only stretching. 100% stretching.
Dr. Green, I have a question for the board. Is stretching generally a way to treat injuries?
It is.
Okay.
And so that being the case, too, you know, there's a question of, are you using your physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedures technique certificate as, you know, as an unlicensed person right now, treating football players, treating all of these people, and that have injuries, that should be diagnosable injuries. You know, you've got testimonies of people, you know, saying that they were hurt and you're helping them, not just I'm going there to feel good kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so no, the answer is absolutely not. Unequivocally, no. I am not treating any injuries. They are specifically told, and I tell them, I can't diagnose anything. I can't treat any injuries. All I can do is if there's any stiffness, or if there's any decreased movement, achiness, I can try to stretch it, just like they do at Stretch Zone. Just like you do at Stretch Med.
What's the name of your Instagram page?
Mueve Flex.
Okay, what about the at Dr. Bernal Instagram?
You're saying my personal?
I don't know how you market it. I don't know how you use it.
So I have stretch place, it's called Mueve Flex. For myself, it's Dr. Bernal. DocCorBernal. Not chiropractor Bernal, not Bernal chiropractic.
But it'd be...
trying to find it. Patient laying on their back, and he's
standing at the edge of the table and pulling out his leg.
It's October 11, 2022, Google Chrome, under Wi-Fi Flex, iList, it's six one down. It appears to start with
I think we need to show so the doctor can all see it.
So what
are we talking about? I'm trying to find it right now.
It's a gentleman in a button-down, long sleeves, ball check shirt. Yeah, it looks like there's a... I can't. Hold on, let me try it now.
Okay, it's at the 35-second mark. That video. On. Oh, put a 30-second mark.
It's this one, right? There you go.
Mine's 117.
There's multiple clips, maybe.
I want to go just for a second.
Well, while we're waiting for that, board members, so this is agendized for your review of his probation and suspension. And technically, since he has not completed the terms of the order, which is all the renewal requirements, the CEs for all the years that he needed to renew and the late fees and payments for that, the board cannot release him from that unless the board believes that they want to in the suspension. But if you're going to release him, then he needs to finish those requirements and then he can re-petition the board and come back.
But do they need to deal with the part where he wants to be here for the part six of his order, that we would, because the charges were acquitted or dismissed, that he doesn't have to comply with the suspension?
They weren't, though. He signed the plea agreement. He
I know.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So you at this time, you cannot release him from suspension until he pays the fees and does the reinstatement, and then you can deal with terms of probation going forward after that. But, of course, you can still discuss this matter with him today as the practicing.
Right. So just to reiterate, the agreement would go away in whole had he been properly vacated or acquitted. But because he signed a guilty plea agreement, that consent agreement doesn't go away because he pled guilty to a felony.
May I address that? And that's the case, that's fine. The way I was explained, they said all convictions will be vacated. And yes, they said, however, there's these new terms. But that's what I was told. That's what the paper says. All convictions will be vacated. So the final, I guess the final period or explanation of that says that, but the way that the initial statement is that all convictions will be vacated in this case contingent upon a new agreement. That's the way that I was explained by my attorney, and that's why I requested that we do that. And the only reason that I didn't continue doing all those requirements that I was doing was because I said, wait a minute, if my convictions are vacated, then why would I do all these other requirements? You know? But I understand what you're saying. Now, if I enter into new plea agreement and Dr.
Yeah, because, in America, we don't send people, or in any country, usually don't send people to jail after you've vacated their charges, correct?
Right.
But I end up in jail.
No, hold on. So you think that I said they vacated my charges and then sent me to jail? No,
that is what happened.
But you got time served.
It could not be the fact that if they were vacated, if you were given a prison sentence.
So again, maybe because you work for the Attorney General's office and I don't, or I don't know the logistics of that, but the way that I was explained is you will be released now. And you will be released because all convictions will be vacated, and the only thing that will be done is there will be a new plea agreement. But again, we're splitting hairs now. And at this point, I think clearly my request for vacating here, or I forgot what it's called, expungement is what the board order says, the consent agreement, expungement. So based on Dr. Stephen Knopf and the Assistant Attorney General, you know, because there was a plea agreement, then it doesn't qualify as complete vacated, but it was, every single charge was completely vacated. Then I entered a new one, which said charge number four I have to plead guilty to it so they can release me. So having said that, that is the reason why I didn't do all those renewals and pay for all those things, because I felt, because all my convictions are vacated, that this order should be vacated or expunged. Now I see that it wasn't. Now, my understanding, and please help me understand this clearly, is it never said, once I'm released, upon release, you must file for a renewal. What if I don't want a renewal? What if I choose not to practice? I mean, again, I'm here, and I'd like to get my license reinstated, but what if I choose not to? Am I required to pay all those renewal fees, even if I choose not to renew? Can you please help me understand?
Well, I mean, not legal advice, but if you don't want to renew your license, you can just let it go.
Okay, thank you.
But you would be in violation of your order.
But
the board probably wouldn't take any action against you, but you would lose your license.
You would lose your license, and you would have to address that matter when you reapply for license.
When I reapply.
But you would still have to address the matter.
I agree, and I thank you for that. And I would have to pay. I believe we said this in our emails or through board staff. I said, I get it. If I'm getting my license, of course I'll gladly pay my renewals and late fees, as many as they are, whether it's $2,000, $3,000, or $4,000, like you told me it was going to be, like $3,800 or something. I'm glad if I'm going to renew. But thank you for that, because I freaked out when Dr. Reno said, you haven't renewed and you didn't pay all those fees. I'm like, oh, hold on. I didn't apply.
But that's, I mean, I think what the board's trying to get to is that is part of the agreement. And for you to be compliant and for you to be a practitioner in the state of Arizona, you have to address this.
I agree. A chiropractic practitioner must address this if they want to have a chiropractic license, and I get that. So when and if I decide to renew, then I will address all of these things gladly. And I thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for that clarification. Again, pardon my ignorance. Don't want to take up, you know, baloney with my confessions of legal ignorance, but again, I was told all convictions will be vacated as long as you enter into this new plea. So that's why I said all my convictions were vacated.
I understand there was a misunderstanding.
Thank you.
and you know you cannot adjust patients, and you cannot advertise that you are a doctor. And
chiropractor, right?
Well, what kind of doctor are you?
Well, if somebody asks me
you cannot say I'm Dr. Burnell anymore.
I cannot.
That implies licensed chiropractor.
Well, taken. Will do. Do I correct people if they call me Dr. Burnell, or say, do I say, don't call me Dr. Burnell? I mean, and I'm not being sarcastic, Dr. Moreno.
You can consult an attorney about that.
Okay, so as long as I don't impersonate like I'm a chiropractor, then I'm in good standing. According to your rule.
I don't want to see you back here.
It's been a long time since I've seen you, Dr. Guarino.
Figure that out.
Perfect.
One step would be fixing your TikTok and Instagram.
When you say fixing it, what do you mean? So it doesn't say...
Can't counsel you on how to...
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. So, but that's my handle. That's not my professional. So I have to change my handle?
The doctor. Okay.
I earned a doctorate degree. It doesn't say I'm a licensed doctor.
Well, I think the issue is with an advertisement.
But for Mueve Place, not for chiropractic.
If your doctor you understand the issue.
I hear you guys. I don't agree. But again, I want to be respectful. So, okay. I like that. No legal advice, but that makes sense. Thank you. No legal advice taken.
Okay. So do we need to take action here today?
No. If he wants to, you know, if he does want his license back, he can just come back and petition and show that he's done, paid the renewal fee and stuff. Because that's it. That's all he has.
Thank you very much.
All right.
May I be excused, ladies and gentlemen of the board?
Yeah, we're done. Thanks.
Chairperson Guarino, wish I could see you another term, but it's good to see you anyways.
Okay. Let's go on to tab number 10.
Robin? Should have locked down.
Yes, I am. All right,
we can hear you now. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Dr. Kyle Robbins.
Thanks. Andrew B.
Yes, you have a memo before you for the release of probation for Dr. Robbins. He was under a probationary order for 2 years, and this is for early termination of probation. He was to successfully pass all portions of the EDAP within 90 days, undergo a substance abuse evaluation, participate in a monitoring program, attend AA meetings at least 2 times per week for the duration of the monitoring period, submit documents verifying compliance with court orders, enroll in random drug and alcohol screening, obtain a primary care physician to coordinate respondents' medical care and treatment, and abstain from alcohol. Dr. Robbins has successfully passed all parts of the EBAS and successfully completed all terms of his probation, and so board staff have no concerns in regards to the board granting early termination.
Okay, board members, any questions for Dr. Robbins?
I'll make a motion to grant the request for early release from probation.
I'll second.
Okay. Those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay. Congratulations, Dr. Robbins, and thank you for complying with the order.
Thank you.
All right. And it's tab number 11, Charles Dermett.
You have another request for early release from probation for Dr. Sermith. The requirements was it was 1 year of probation and to complete 6 hours of continuing education. Dr. Sermith has completed the continuing education and has requested to be released from probation. And again, board staff has built in for granting the release.
Okay, so I grappled with this just because his order started in July of this year, but he has complied with everything, and in the for the safety of the public, I think we've done what we needed to do to put him on probation. There's a record of what happened. I don't see any benefit of him staying on probation. There's no chaperones or anything else happening with that, so. Merely, I would
probation within a couple of months, but I used not the term, so.
I'll make the motion to grant release.
Second the motion.
Any further discussion? Call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the ayes have it. And we will move on to the 12 for board business. We have open session meeting minutes for July 19th, 2022. And it's very exciting that we're going to be moving to a new format of approving these. This could be our last one, and we go through line by line. Let's start with one. Fractions. Two. Page three. Oh, page two. 926 Carino is spelled stay in the U slip.
Oh, sure not.
Okay. Page three. Anybody get it?
Should be able to spell the board's chair.
93. The Mr. Joshua Greer. That was the attorney.
It's been a rough couple weeks from the office, let me tell you.
I guess Robert here.
Page four. Five. Six. I think line seven should be abstinence from alcohol.
Yeah.
Eight. Nine. Ten. So move to approve as amended.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Okay, first by Knoth, second by Ms. Powell. Favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, they are approved and amended. And then the next tab is for meeting minutes for August 30th, 2020.
Before we do these, could we discussed at the last meeting that we would move to using the audio recording of the official minutes for the record. So if we could make the motion that moving forward, the audio recording will be considered the official minutes for the board meeting, and then I will produce, or staff will produce, this audio supplement of the minutes, which would just catalog the start and stop time for the each agenda item.
I will make that motion.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, and for discussion, I'd like through some of these and saw that we went to the thousandth of a second mark. Specificity, some of these start and end times. You can really dial in when you want to listen to these. The question, those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Let's have it.
Okay.
Okay, so do we need to approve now or we're good?
No, this will just be the document, and that's what we'll post on the website to aid anybody who access to those records.
Okay, perfect. Okay, next is the student report.
Budget report, you have the financials for July and August. Everything appears to be good. We are working with the governor's office regarding our financial requests for two additional staff members to support board staff. Moving that forward, so we're working on that. We have all of our licensure files out for scanning, so we'll have all electronic licensure files moving forward. Kind of huge. So we're in the middle of that project. So it's going to be awesome. So easier to get access for you all, too. We'll be able to provide those licensure documents. We'll see a public records request, and we'll have the entire storage room that's empty.
Wow.
So, and it will save some costs long-term, so we'll have some licensure costs in terms of using the software, but we can kind of start to eliminate some of that storage cost that we've been of licensure files, because we'll be able to restore everything electronically, and then electronically purge them once that time's up.
You can put the two new people in the storage area.
That's way out of the closet.
Right? You stay long enough, you'll get a window, right?
So how will you do that with all of our paper files that will all have to be scanned?
They take them. They come, box them all up, and they're scanning each of them individually, and we'll kind of go through and kind of map them all up and all that. And then as we move through, we'll electronically scan them moving forward, and then they'll just upload them. They'll just kind of become part of our process. Site log, not much to report. We seem to just be holding at 60, so as fast as you all are clearing them out, they're... So we're working through them. We are down to 40 cases that are over the 180-day mark, so kind of that's starting to tick back up. But as you can see, these cases are a little larger this time. A bit more detailed than some of the other cases that we've been presenting to you in the past. It's kind of like we've gotten rid of the low-hanging fruit and are kind of digging into some of the more involved or that take a little bit longer for staff to investigate. I would also like to provide you regarding the FedGAN database. I pushed and pushed and really was trying to get it online for the renewal season, and that's kind of my stick that I was holding over them, that we really, really needed that and that we didn't have another way to do that. And Connie, while I'm talking, if you could pull up the renewal website to show that to the board, our website. I don't see it happening, and I'm concerned if we launch it, that board staff is not going to have enough time to be familiar with all the ins and outs. And the solution that Cynthia offered us was maybe they would just build the renewal portal and then come back and build the rest. And the last thing I really want for the board is us to only have the renewal portal and maybe a year from now we finally get the rest of it. So I have not disclosed to Cynthia that I'm just going to go ahead and proceed with our previous renewal process, but that's my plan, is just and then try to get them to have it finished, all parts of it finished by the end of the year. But we did make some...
Better than what it was.
Is it really?
It has been.
So we have made some updates and enhancements to the website, provide some more clarification around the questions that we receive, continuing education, the process. We are mailing on Friday letters to everyone who is on the paper list that we will no longer be providing a paper application, that they will need to go to the website and print and download it, or they can come into the office and pick up a copy.
So you're going to be sorry about that.
I would really hate to tell you all this. Like, the majority of people who've been in front of you are on that list.
I know.
So.
And a couple others who know.
So we've tried, but, like, to go back to Wolfgang's situation, Connie, if you scroll all the way down to the bottom where the applications are, you're going to, so there's the renewal link and the payment and the application link, which will take you in and you will pay up front first. And then it will email you the link and open the Adobe Sign for you to complete. So I think that will address the issue of getting all the way through the application, going out to pay, and not coming back in.
Excellent idea.
So then underneath that is the renewal application. If you'll click on the online app, Connie, this will open just the Adobe Sign without the payment. So should you pay and not see the message or not get it or you click out of it, we have a method for you just to get the application. So that's the new renewal application for this year. And then the bottom one is to print a PDF copy. So again, like Dr. Wolstein, who had the issue and felt like he couldn't communicate to staff, couldn't get to the records or get it to do what it wanted, this would be an option where you could just print it off at home and get it to the board. Additionally, we put some stopgaps in on our side on the back end where we're checking daily to see who's paid and verifying that we have an application for them. If we don't, we are sending them an email saying, we don't have an application for you. That's part of the process. Here's how you get back to that link. So hopefully that will be smoother. And then we provided the link to those reinstatement applications should anyone want to reinstate their life.
Do we have a timeline when we have to notify them that the application is valid or whatever?
Really, it's January 25th.
Okay.
We notify them. So basically how the board's treated it in the past is if we have your payment and we don't have the application, we just send you the absence suspension letter.
And that happens by the 25th. Or these doctors aren't getting that. They are getting that.
They are getting that. So the board notification postcards are scheduled to be mailed on Friday. And the email scheduled to go out as well. So those that notification will go out. Website's live if you wanted to go renew today. We've had a couple people already submit. Seems to be working appropriately. And additionally, we've been working through and updating forms because we recognize that this isn't coming on as line as quick as possible. So we've been building some new forms and new complaint forms. You'll start to see those in your packets. I'm trying to maybe make sure we get really good information prior to starting our investigation. And so that's really everything I have. The last thing on the agenda is Dr. Bennett did provide a script for you to review regarding Senate Bill 1077. Just to provide some educational directions from the board now that this bill has passed. If you want to review and edit it, we can do that and authorize Dr. Bennett to report it, and then we could send out an email to the licensees should you want to provide that educational direction.
Right, and so just to hold the thought around that, we don't ever want to appear to be in a doctor advocacy role. That's not our mission. Our mission is to protect the public. But by getting out of this, it does protect the public. Counter argument to that, and so I'm in favor for it. I think it's the more we can educate our licensees to keep them right track, it does serve the public. That's kind of the direction that we got a little bit from the FPLB meeting. So what do we need to do with this today?
It's entirely up to you. We could edit it right now here in the meeting if you have edits. If you're good with the content as it is, you could vote to authorize Dr. Bennett to record it and distribute it to the board's licensee email list.
I'm good with what I read.
And we would just need a motion and a second.
I'll make a motion to finalize this and provide it back to Dr. Bennett.
To create an educational video?
Right.
Okay.
Okay, second by Ms. Powell. Further discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Guys, have it. Okay. I'll call to the public now. If anybody has anything they want to say, they can say whatever they want. Can't reply. It's not a two-sided conversation. Anyone? Yeah. Nobody? Establish future meeting dates. November 30th. Your last meeting for the year.
Yes, and actually we'll be in boardroom C, so we'll be in here again. Just A is not going to be available until April.
We'll be
in boardroom C.
Okay, all right. That's the one with the broken mic?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, time is 1:28, meeting is adjourned.